Blog Talk Radio.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
hello and welcome to another edition of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am your host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. Tonight we are going to be joined by Ryan Babyface Benoit. He's an MMA fighter out of Texas, and I can't wait to talk to him about some things. That's coming up in about 20 minutes. We'll be talking with Ryan Benoit. We'll also be talking about WWE Raw, WWE 2K14, and looking back at CZW Night of Infamy, and it is a night of infamy when I'm joined by the man to my left, the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Colachico.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You can follow me on Twitter at DanLaw83 and Obey Puck Show, which is on Monday nights at 9 on the HIAC Talk Radio Network.
Look at you getting professional there.
Thank you. I try.
I like it. Now, the man who is always a professional, to my right, is, of course, our MMA and wrestling analyst, Omega Squad, Chris Green. How are you tonight, sir?
Peace be upon you, brothers. Follow me at Twitter on at Omega Squad.
Thank you, Lord.
When are you going to get a show? Everybody else has two or three different shows on the network. When are you getting a show?
About the same time you two get kids.
Never?
Never.
So,
awesome.
There you go.
That one's pretty easy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Easy answer to that question. Now, you know, I brought it up. We're going to talk about it a little bit later on. And I did call him Benoit. I did. But it's Benoit. It's Benoit.
I caught that. I wasn't sure, like, where to go with that one. But I kind of left it alone.
No. It's something that should be brought up because I...
Did they erase him from history?
No. Ryan Benoit is doing quite fine. In fact, he's writing his own history as we speak. He's had some great fights. The two fights he's had this year, and we'll talk about this later with him, have been amazing. Hey, let's talk about the MFC fight for a second, Omega, because that fight...
Was that the one you linked on the group page?
No.
Okay, because I started watching that one.
That was his last fight with Cody Fuller. Yeah. The one we're talking about is just an amazing fight. Omega, break it down for a second. I'm not playing the thing.
Okay. I think the interesting fight was, that was an interesting fight. Who did he fight? I gotta pull this up because I can't remember the guy's name.
Berchick.
Yes, Anthony Berchick. Interesting fight. I think it was at a catchweight of 130, I believe. Berchick seemed to be the stronger, you know, and bigger fighter in that, and pretty much controlled the fight all the way through. But Ryan was very resilient, showed great heart, was active in trying to defend, trying to set up submissions, even in the face of losing the points battle, fought right up until the very, very end. It was an amazing fight, lots of action, lots of submissions, lots of back and forth, give and take. It was a great fight.
And it's closer than, I believe it was Judge 29-28 on the judges' scorecards. But
yeah, I think Ryan took the third round, which he needed to at that point. But
yeah,
he needed the knockout. But I'm interested in see what did they tell him going into that third round. Did they tell him he needed a knockout or a submission?
Don't beat him, I'm going to kill you.
We'll find out later on when Ryan joins us, that's for sure. Now, we're going to talk about this a little bit later on as well, Dan, but Night of Infamy certainly lived up to its name.
As
the Bulldozer Matt Tremont siding with Drew Blood, Rory Mondo, and Ron Mathis to take out the nation of intoxication, Dan.
All I know is after being in the ring with Mr. Tremont and seeing how he could snap on a dime like that, I am actually fearing for my life. Because I've been hit with a chair by that guy before. And I imagine how much harder he could hit somebody with it who is actually an active member of the roster. Holy moly. But when he...
Let's talk about this coalition that Drew Blood has kind of under the radar built here for CZW.
Under whose radar? Because I think someone on the show, D. Dixon, foreshadowed this.
I certainly did. I was asking Drew the questions, the hard questions that he would not answer. That's what I do here. I said, what's this at the end of the preview show? You're there lurking in the back, Drew. What's going on?
I just respect him, man. We're just boys, brothers.
Yeah,
just
boys.
And look at all that whole time. Yeah, you're boys, all right.
Look at Devin Moore's brains all over the place.
I was going to say, look at the carnage in the ring after that match. And the sound over, I'm just going to call it the arena. The sound over the arena as it was happening was one of shock.
It was. Probably the biggest surprise to me was how quickly and how fickle those fans actually were.
Well,
this is their hero. This is the guy that they look up to. Of everybody that, since Nick Gage has been gone, this has been the guy that these fans have certainly rallied behind. And now?
I, for one, am going to cheer him for fear of my life.
That might be worse, though, Dan. He might not... He might not appreciate the cheers.
Well, we'll find out. What do you want me to do? Okay, whatever you say.
I will be in attendance at Cage of Death to see the culmination of this. I'll tell you.
I will not be able to be there. I will be pay-per-viewing it. Alas, my return to New Jersey will be later in the month.
No. That's...
But I might be there for OPW.
Oh, well, hey. So. You know, you it's six of one, half a dozen of another, Dan, with you. It really is.
It pretty much is. And the fact, when I want that on my tomb. Dean Dixon.
Six of one. Oh, that's my cliche that I give to you this week.
No, thank you. That was so funny.
That's my cliche.
For those who follow us on Twitter, that was the most, for me, the most funniest / annoying conversation I've ever had with a friend ever.
You know what? I think our conversations on Twitter usually are.
Because I was laughing, but I was like, okay, I won't ever do it again. I promise.
It's just after so... Omega, you've heard Dan talk about a dog's ass before, the sun shining on a dog's ass. It's past its point now, right?
They're called cliches for a reason, guys.
But cliches are allowed to be overused and overused and overused. In fact, it was not every episode, Dan. It was referenced on Obey the Puck this week.
I know. I listened.
I did that for you, though.
I'm sure you did.
Out of love. I do love you.
Dan.
No,
Yeah, now's not the time or place for such a discussion.
As a brother...
Now, Dan, this week you happened to pick up WWE 2K14.
Yes.
How do you feel about it?
I like it. I like it a lot. And I was one of the things I was worried. You should have seen me. I'm going to mute that. You should have seen when I bought it before I even pulled out in the car, opened it, and looked at the controls and the manual. I was like, oh, here we go. Very good control system. I like it. The last two games, it became real complicated to me because they had THQ had the simple old controls that they modified very little since the Revenge No Mercy days on the N64. And that was the main thing. And getting to learn them through, it's very cool through the 30 Years of WrestleMania mode. As you go to different matches, it teaches you different things to do with your controls that you need to do in the matches.
Yes.
So by WrestleMania 3, you got most of the controls down, I felt.
How do you feel about the 30 years?
I love
of
it.
WrestleMania.
I like it. And
oh,
I like...
Wait till you get to 24, Dan.
Why? The Undertaker.
No, not the Undertaker. No, no, I finally got that. You know what it was? I was going to the wrong side of the ring. For those in the know, you have to perform Undertaker's dive at WrestleMania 24 on, actually, I believe it's 23, on Batista. Yeah.
Announcer side or other side?
You have to do it the entrance side.
Entrance side.
The ramp side.
Gotcha.
So if you do it anyplace else, he just blocks it consistently without fail.
Oh, man, I'd be throwing things.
Like, you son of a...
I'd be throwing things.
And it was the only objective I had to get. I already hit the choke slam. I already did this. I did that. I got to hit this dive, and I can't do it.
The hardest one for me so far was 2 with Bundy.
What?
That was the one that I was kicking my ottoman around the living room. You son of a bitch!
Wait, why was that so difficult?
I don't know!
No, that was...
That was pissing me off, Dean!
The first difficulty that I think I got to was WrestleMania 6 with Warrior.
Son of a... Anyway. No!
But 24, the one I'm talking about, is Orton... It's the triple threat. Orton, Triple H, and Cena. Oh, you have to perform the punt and pin within 10 seconds.
Oh, you know...
Not going to happen.
Or to that.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. No, the Warrior one, I got the first try.
Really?
I nailed it. Yes, I swear. I nailed it. And I was thinking after the match, I was like, Dean said this one was difficult.
Well,
so really,
I didn't get the WrestleMania moment. I went back and I have it now, but first playthrough, I just pinned.
First playthrough, I got it, and I was like, because while I'm doing the match, I'm remembering, okay, in 4 minutes, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I got to look for the clothesline, and then I got to look for the missed leg drop and then do the splash.
Well, I didn't get to that moment. I didn't get to the second moment.
Yeah, I don't know how I found it. I kind of found it by accident because, you know, as you know, in the match it says hidden moment.
Oh, just wait. Just wait till you get to the Iron Man match. That's fun.
Oh, crap.
That's fun. Try getting overtime 0-0, my friend. You're going to spend a lot of time on the outside of that. The last 9 minutes you'll be on the outside of the ring, running around, staying away from Brett. But you have to get back in there within a minute so you can do that, so Brett can put you in the sharpshooter.
Joy.
Yeah, good times. Good times. Hey, but right now I'm stuck on 24.
Which when do you start having to be John Cena like 100 times?
Starting with 20.
Oh, God.
The beginning of the Cena era, as I like to say.
I think I just might skip it.
So you have to beat Big Show, you have to beat the next year, you beat JBL, then you have to beat Shawn Michaels, you have to... Oh, it's just terrible. You go through, you're like, yeah, why do I have to do this? I don't want to. I really don't want to.
Oh, that's funny. No, but overall... my last problem with the last game, and I remember I skipped 13, was with 12, was the community servers never worked. And this has not been a problem.
I haven't even gotten on there yet.
Oh, yeah, I downloaded Goldust Sting, 80 Sting, a bunch of arenas. I made the New Moon Proving Grounds.
Did you?
I did. A little bigger than it is in real life, but I couldn't pick any smaller.
There's so many things I could say, but...
Yeah, go ahead. I left it open.
Yeah, but I'm not, Dan.
I thought smiling Chris...
I'm Green, a professional.
I thought smiling Chris Green over there was going to help it.
I was just like, I'm just leaving it to you guys.
Thank you.
No, don't.
Well, I appreciate
it. Don't ever do that. What else happened this week? We talked a little bit about Tremont. We're going to talk about... Oh, yeah. Congratulations to a member of the New Moon roster and, of course, a very active member of the ECWA roster, finally winning the ECWA Heavyweight Championship.
And what I heard was a 42-minute...
42 minutes?
42 minutes.
That's
classic, I heard.
42 minutes. Is that including entrances and introductions?
Probably.
Okay.
You know, Papa Don walks real slow to the ring.
Well, he has to engage with the fans. And...
I'm not... I'm the man. Hey, hi. It could go, it just takes about 10 seconds.
That, you know what, Keikoa finally winning that, I saw the first battle that they had back in May of 2012 at the aptly named Divide and Conquer for ECWA. And
whoa, wait a minute.
What?
Which one was raising the bar?
That was Adam Cole, Dan.
No, no, what month was that?
June.
Must have been June.
Yeah, it was June.
I thought it was May. Never mind. Continue, sir.
Okay. So I remember that battle, and I remember how good that was. That was a 25-minute to 30-minute battle, and that time, Papadon won the Mid-Atlantic title, which he promptly gave to Tartaglia.
Ugh. I've seen four or five matches with Papadon as champion, and... one of my favorite memories ever of a wrestling show, and that's a lot of years, is with you and Mark Go Thompson.
What, War Games?
No, Anthony Nice and Papadon.
Well, that was War Games.
It was War Games. Yeah, it's all blending together right now. But when we looked at each other when he hit the was it the splash? What's the
450 splash?
When he hit the 450. We both, it was like in slow motion behind the guardrail. We both looked at Thompson looked at me, looked at you, then you looked at me, then I looked at him, and we both, oh my God, he's going to beat, and it was the closest two count of the night.
You know what, put that YouTube video up on the HIAC Talk Radio Twitter.
Twitter, I can do that, yeah, because I got that moment, that's right.
You do have that moment, and you have the audio of
Mark.
Mark.
Oh, my God. Oh!
which probably makes... I miss Mark so much. He's doing a morning show. I don't know what the hell he's up to.
He went to a new station or something, right?
It's owned by the same... I don't know, Dan.
It's just a station or something.
Who knows with Mark? I don't know what's going on with Mark.
Why are you yelling at me? Oh, I didn't take these down because I was upset, was I?
Oh, did you delete them, Dan?
No, I think I made them private.
Well, make them unprivate.
Make them unprivate.
Or make them public, whatever. So, Omega, how has your week been so far?
It's been busy. I mean, mostly. I mean, I have to work.
I have to talk now.
And I'm doing double duty here, guys. I'm trying to watch the fights while we're on the podcast here.
Oh God!
Oh, that was one of the best moments we've had with you. I'm working.
I'm fine.
Anyway.
Alrighty then.
Bellator 106, do you want to give us a little handle on that? Did you get to see it?
I got to see the main event.
People are calling that great.
It was pretty good. It was a really good main event. I don't think it was as good as the first one. I think Chandler got robbed, in my opinion. It was a very close fight, very competitive, especially in the later rounds. Chandler pretty much dominated the first two rounds, in my view. Had the stronger game, was basically muscling Alvarez around. Alvarez couldn't seem to get anything going in those first two rounds, and then Alvarez started to turn it on after Chandler started to tire. Chandler got his second win in the fourth round, really came back and started landing some stuff, and then that last round I think was all Alvarez. Not all Alvarez, but I think Alvarez took it. I think it was a very competitive last round. I really thought that Chandler won that, though. But overall, it was a very good fight, something that Bellator would have needed, except for the fact that it ran over and people's DVRs cut off and My DVR didn't even work on it, so.
Well.
So.
Thank you, Time Warner.
Yeah, so it was, I'm like I said, I managed to watch the main event online, but I didn't get to see the rest of the card. But, I mean, it sounds to me like everyone they picked to be big for this big card that was supposed to be on pay-per-view, King Mo lost, Pat Curran lost, you know. It just sounds like it was a very mixed bag for Bellator.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently Dana White and Bjorn Rebney got into it as well. Something about karma. Ooh.
Well, you know, the reason Eddie Alvarez was fighting on this card at all was because of Bellator's matching contracts. They have matching rights on all their fighters. So UFC offers them something, then Bellator has the right to match it. And there was a big thing about pay-per-view points because UFC offered Eddie Alvarez pay-per-view points, and then they went to court about it, and apparently the court sided with Bellator, so Dana's not happy about that, understandably so. And then their pay-per-view pretty much fell apart. So I don't actually blame Dana too much, but he does enjoy it a little bit more than he needs to.
Yeah, but they had other words. I think it was pertaining really to Eddie Alvarez more than anything else, but we'll put that on hold. We're going to talk about that in a little bit because our guest is here. Now, we talked about it a little bit when we first started out. Ryan Benoit, he is a fighter out of Texas, and he really was impressive in his last fight. Now, talk about that last fight a little bit, Omega, before we get him on. That last fight against Fuller on Legacy.
Yeah, that was a very, very strong win for Ryan. He came out, basically was the more aggressive fighter, really came out and really pushed Fuller around, landed some really wild shots, basically pushed the pace and eventually got the TKO at 453 in the first round. It was a very strong showing for him coming off his loss to Anthony Berchek.
Well, we'll talk about the Berchek fight as well, but right now, after his walkout music, we are going to be joined by Ryan Benoit.
Were you trying to get crazy with this thing? Don't you know I'm loco?
Our guest at this time is MMA fighter out of Texas. He fights for Legacy. He fights for MFC as well. It is Ryan Benoit. How are you doing tonight, Ryan?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. You're also joined by Omega Squad Chris Green. He is our MMA analyst. I'm sure he has a lot for you. Dan is also with us as well. So what I wanted to start out with is a question I start out with all fighters is, why did you decide to get in to MMA? What was it? What clicked for you?
What really clicked when I was in high school, you know, I did a lot of wrestling. As a wrestler, hanging out with wrestlers, we used to get into a lot of scraps, obviously. I think any wrestler out there will agree with me that during high school you have your hellion days, but I loved fighting, when I saw The Ultimate Fighter and the UFC started to get popular, I really started getting into it. I was already into boxing at the time. And so I started grappling here and there. I started doing a little bit of boxing here and there when I was about 15 or 16. And then when I went to go wrestle in California, I went to go wrestle for this school called Menlo College. And a lot of guys on the team had already fought MMA before, and you know, I kind of clicked with them a little bit, and we ended up going over to AKA one time, and that's when I saw, at this time, it was like nothing but high-level dudes. I don't even think Cain Velasquez was even in the UFC yet. And, you know, they were all wrestlers, and at that time, I kind of was like, man, this is something I would really, I really think I would be good at, you know? I'd always loved the scrap, I loved the grind of a fight and everything, so I figured, you know, go for it. And I ended up having a talk with my parents, where they said, you're either going to go for this, you got to go for it, go for it 100%. And then, you know, I got their blessing to go to school at the time. Went over to Saxon Muay Thai when I got back to Texas, and then the rest is history.
So, Ryan, tell us about your training. What does a typical training week for you entail?
You know, I do a lot of Muay Thai at Saxon's. I'm there pretty much every night. But I try to mix it up a lot locally. I have my different days when I go with specific different people. I do a lot of wrestling, and I do a lot of boxing. I have a great boxing coach, is two-time world champion, Jesus Chavez. And, you know, I have him. I go to these different guys specifically to try to get, like, their style of, you know, I go to them because I like specifically something about them. So, but when I go to these places, I don't have the idea of thinking like the MMA version. When I go to, like, the boxing gym, I go to learn how to box like a boxer. When I go to the Muay Thai gym, I learn how to do kickboxing like a Muay Thai fighter. When I go to wrestling, I learn to wrestle like a wrestler. So, because in my idea is that all these put together, that, you know, that's what MMA is. With all these different sports mixing together. So my idea is to try to be the best at all of them. So to be the best at all of them, you got to specifically train those types of workouts. So this is what I try to accomplish throughout my entire week.
So at one point your parents came to you and you said 100% or nothing. Do you think you would have tried something else if they weren't going to back you up?
I probably would have just continued wrestling. In a way, fighting was like another extension of wrestling for me. You know, I had wrestled since I was a little kid, from the time I was like 10 years old up till I graduated from high school. And then, you know, once you get past college, there's not much left for you to wrestle in except for, you know, fighting. And, you know, I just kind of was like, you know, this is going to be my way of wrestling. This is going to be my continuation of that little edge, that spark that wrestling does for me. And it's that little competition, the continuation of it. In a sense, and you know, if I hadn't have done it, I probably, you know, would have just finished up school and finished out my wrestling career and working a regular job right now.
All that during all that time when you were training and basically, you know, giving out beatings, taking beatings, was there ever a time your parents were like, "Okay, that's enough," or they've always been behind you 100%?
No, I've had five surgeries now since I went for this 100%. So anytime I got an injury or something happened, it was always they were trying to convince me not to do it. My dad had always loved it. My dad loved everything. He liked my black eyes. He liked my cuts. He liked everything. But my mom, you know, I'm her baby, so she's always like, no, you need to stop. You need to quit. Just give it up now. They think you're done after every injury, so I keep going. I love it.
So you make the commitment, you get trained. Tell us about your first fight. How did it feel to get in the cage for the first time?
My first amateur MMA fight was in Louisiana, and it was a crazy fight. I had no idea who the guy I was fighting, didn't know anything about him, I just knew his first and last name, but couldn't find any stats, couldn't find nothing nowhere, couldn't find where he trained or anything. So, I'm on my way there, and I came in 5 pounds overweight. The amateur fight, so they're a little bit lenient about it. So then when my opponent shows up, he comes in 6 pounds overweight. So we both just say, okay, let's just fight. And, you know, when the fight started, I was going 100 miles an hour, man. I went for it 100%, just like I did in my high school days of wrestling, where as soon as the bell started, you were 100% the whole time. And that's kind of what I did, and I ended up smashing him really bad in the first round, but we got out of the first round, and I was thinking, holy crap, I got to do all that again. And I blew my load in the first round. I went all out 100%. I tried to knock him out. I grabbed anything that I could hold on to, and I squeezed it as hard as I could. And I was fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. And I didn't realize I was really beating the guy badly, like on the speed. I was beating him on the ground. And if I had just been, like, patient, I could have ended it at, like, the whole time. But I was just like, punch, take him down. Punch, move, go for submission, punch. You know, and in the second round, I kind of did the same thing. I just came out and I calmed down a little bit because I think I had just gotten too tired. It made me calm down, and then I took him down, took his back, and just re-naked choked him. Put him out.
So at what point did you decide to go pro?
The very next fight after that, because I didn't want to do that anymore and get for free, you know. That's kind of how I looked at it. I was like, if I'm going to do this, I might as well get paid for it.
And, that's understandable.
You know, yeah, right? So the very next fight, I went pro, and at this time, you know, I settled down a little bit. I trained with, you know, a little bit more, and I put some time in between. I did a couple of little smokers and little amateur type of deal fights, and then I decided to go pro, and, you know, it was good from there. I was able to, you know, first round knockout, and that's kind of took off, you know. Once I got that first cage jitters out, that little bit of, I like to call it cage jitters, like that first round rush, once I got that out of me, like, I've been able to stay calm and fight better since then.
Well, describe that for people that really don't know what cage jitters really do to a person, because they always talk about it, your first fight in the UFC, people are, you know, they have the jitters. What is that like the first time you really get in there and this is what you're doing, you and a guy are fighting?
Man, it's really fast. You know, you kind of, you know, during the moment, everything is way different. But now that I can look back on it, you know, you're going 100 miles an hour at a time, man. You know, you pretty much go off of instinct. Yeah, at this time, you don't think about like a game plan. You don't think like, okay, move around, keep your hands up, jab, 1-2, look for an opening. You're kind of just, you go for it, you know, because you're still young getting into this, and more than likely the guy you're fighting is the same way, So you really got to go off of instinct. A lot of wrestlers will go back to wrestling, even if they've been boxing for the past 2 years. That's their natural instinct, is to wrestle, you know. And it's such a rush. It's really like hard to describe, but you know, it's really fast. It's a big rush. You get hit. You know, you have your moments when you panic. You have your moments when you're panicking and like a good thing because you think you got him, and then you know you run out of breath, and then you get really emotional. You get angry, you get happy, you feel desperate, you feel like a king. It's such an experience to go through something like that. Those first little cage rush is something you'll never forget.
Now, from what I've seen of your fights, you seem to come out pretty aggressive and pretty well. I think I described your last fight as you came out like a buzzsaw. Is that the type of style you've always had? Like you had a pretty successful career in your early days, winning by TKO and submission. Is it just because you rush guys real quick and pick up the win that way?
I've heard, you know, a lot of people say that maybe I'm a little wild, and specifically this last fight was a little bit wild. Okay, so we come out a little bit wild. Give me 1 second. I'm sorry about that. So they come out, they said I've been a little bit wild, but I think it's not so much that I'm really trying to go crazy and look for the knockout. I kind of just, I try to fight hard the whole time that I'm fighting in any position, you know. And I've tried to learn a little bit in this last fight, but the reason I think I looked like such looping punches is I could feel the knockout when I first touched him. You know, I could feel it when I was walking forward. And, you know, I could feel him really getting away. And at one point, even when I tried to hit him the first time, I really leaped into it, and he really ran from it. And so I was just thinking, like, just hit him. And then when I first started hitting him, I saw the way that I could feel how he reacted, and I saw the way his head went down, and I could feel the knockout. I could feel it. So I went for it 100%. I was thinking one of these punches is going to put him down. And, so, you know, I was swing. But, you know, in my previous fight, it was never anything, like, specific, you know. I just fight and I just punch where I see the punch, and when I see the power, like, I throw it hard every time, you know. I figure if you're gonna punch, do it how it's supposed to be gone, like throw it how it's supposed to be thrown. Don't hold it back, you know, because you may not get this chance again.
All right, so you had some professional fights under your belt, and then you get the call for Legacy Fighting, and you made your debut there at LFC 11. Let's go back to when you got the call, because Legacy, they have a television deal. They're on Access TV. This is a lot of exposure. How did you feel when you got that call for Legacy?
Man, it was crazy. I was on vacation in Mexico at the time. My manager called me and told me about it, that it was on TV, and it was against a tough dude. I knew who the guy was. It was Cody Williams. He's, you know, real stocky, real jacked, big 135, who's real aggressive on the feet, too. So I kind of thought about the fight. I reviewed it. I watched the video on him, and I knew I could beat this guy, but I knew it was just up to however I could control my head during the fight. And so, you know, I just tried to be in as good a shape, but, you know, it was like, this is my opportunity. This was like my call for the UFC at the time. This was my chance to get my foot in the door and, like, take off from there. And so, you know, I trained really, really hard for it. I trained, you know, once I got that call, I put about 3 months of time into it. And I made myself sharp, man. I made myself, like, ready for this fight. The only thing that held me back was I hadn't fought in almost a year due to a hand injury. I had 6 screws and a plate put in my right hand. And so I had almost a year off completely. That was the only thing that kind of got me in that fight, because he kind of tagged me up a little bit early in the fight. But, you know, I went back in the wrestle mode, like I said, when that instinct kicked in. Because that fight, I had the cage jitters. And same thing, like I said earlier, my instincts kicked in. I took him down and then started wrestling a little bit on the ground. And then this little sweep that I hit, I got this guy in a little sweep that I practice all the time during training, and I never think about it. Because I feel people walk into it all the time. They just naturally put their feet, like, right where it's easy for me to get it. He went for it, and then I took his back and choked him. But, you know, that was my moment. That was a good sweep, and it got me noticed. And then the rest is history.
So how did that change your career getting into a larger organization like Legacy? What kind of exposure did you get from it? And did you get any kind of – you were getting interviews at that point? Were you any like that, better training or partners?
Yeah, it was a total change from that point, you know, because I had fought on a high level of show. You know, this was the first time I think I had ever had, like, a lot of sponsors and stuff. So for me, it was such a high moment, but it got me exposed because Legacy took a big interest in me. They liked how the fight went. They were trying to hype up that guy at the time. And, you know, I fought in that guy's hometown, and I came in and beat him. So it was kind of like a, you know, like, oh, who's this guy? But, you know, they gave me another fight, then they gave me another fight, and then it took off from there. But, you know, even my training partners, other people wanted to train with me a little bit. I started getting a little bit more phone calls from, you know, local guys from the USC that, you know, were wanting to train. And I was able myself to talk to these guys, and they would let me train, you know, because they're high, high-level dudes, and I'm just this guy who fought one time on HDNet, and, you know, they took an interest in me, and I was able to really expand myself and start training with more boxing coaches and more things in my area. Even my main trainer, Saxon, you know, he opened up a little bit to start going to other gyms around. So it made a big impact, man. It completely changed my whole career and the whole road that this thing was going down. It was that was really my moment.
So who are these training partners you're picking up? I think you mentioned, did you train with Cain Velasquez, or did you just kind of watch him?
I was a little wrestler at that time, a little 125 pounder in wrestling. I went out there a little early. I was only 17 at that time. But I didn't really get much with those guys. Those guys were something else. I just went to go train over there a couple of times. I rolled over there a couple of times, but I was still kind of learning everything. What I'm talking about is, like, guys, like, locally, like, you know, Donnie Bedford has his own gym. He's on the Ultimate Fighter. Dustin Pegg, Team Takedown is also out here, which had, at that time, was, you know, a huge list of guys. You know, Will Campuzano is a good friend of mine. I've been training with him for a couple of years now. You know, they're my friends also, but, you know, they're more my friends now than they were before. But these guys really helped me out. They really helped with my confidence and everything, like trying to fight. And you know, training with these guys developed me a lot more of the MMA style. And, you know, they coached me a lot this whole way. You know, I trained with Anthony and Jaquani also. He comes from the same gym in Plano. Mm-hmm. And he's really helped me a lot. And just being in that environment and being around these guys that took an interest in me really helped everything, man. It really helped my confidence. It really helped. You know, being confident in a fight is a huge, huge thing. A lot of guys, they undertrain that. They overtrain their body sometimes. They undertrain their mind. You know, and that's a huge thing. If you don't have the mind to go with all your skills, you're wasting it. You can't just go out there and be flexing the whole time and then not be able to have the mind to fight, you know. And these guys really helped me develop that, really helped me mature as a person, as a fighter.
Well, earlier this year, you made the trip to Canada for MFC. You were in the main event for True Grit against Anthony Burchak. Now, this fight, outside of the UFC, and I think if it's been more widely seen, a lot of people would say that this was the fight of the year. What were your thoughts just going into that fight? It's a promotion in Canada. It's pretty far away from Texas. It's the first time you fought internationally. What were your thoughts going into that fight?
Well, you know, if I put myself back in the moment, I thought this was, you know, another breakthrough moment. At that time, I'd always liked MFC. MFC was one that when I started watching tapes of fights and stuff, MFC was one of the ones that would always pop up. So to have that opportunity was just like, wow, for me. That was finally internationally. You know, I had never even gotten on a plane to go for a fight. I never even really traveled outside of Texas for a fight. So, you know, this was like a huge, huge step up for me. And it was a lot to take in at the time. There's a lot going on, you know, during my personal life at that time. You know, and that played a big factor into training and stuff up for the fight. But, you know, going into the fight against Anthony himself, I felt great about it. I'd watched his videos. I'd watched his tapes. And, you know, I felt like he's definitely a guy I should have been able to beat. And I still feel like he's a guy that I can beat. I think that the things were just a little bit off at that time. And it was his night to win, you know. He should have won it that night, and he did, and he accomplished what he should have. You know, and I give him props for that. But I still think that he's a guy that I should be able to beat, like, first round, for sure.
So what do you think was off that night? Was it just that he seemed a little bigger in my views? Was it that size difference, or was it something else that was off?
You know, a lot of it was me. I hadn't, you know, a lot of it was leading up to that fight too. I had a very busy week leading up to that fight that I don't want to get too much into it, but there was a lot going on, and I was really, really busy, and my schedule was so stacked up the 2 days before the fight that I had barely even had time to cut weight for the fight. I barely had time to even get sleep. So that, not getting sleep before, you know, one of the biggest fights of your career is huge. You know, nothing to take away from Anthony. You know, he had a great game plan, and I hadn't fought anybody like him yet. Nobody that had good wrestling, nobody that had, you know, consistency and pressure like he did. He did a good job on that part. That was a big lesson that I learned in that fight too. He came at me very MMA stylish, and I hadn't faced that in a fight yet. But, you know, there was a lot going on in my personal life. I just found out I was having a baby. You know, I was in the process of trying to get my own place and trying to balance out a lot of things in my life, which took away a lot of time from training camp. So, you know, I felt I was a little bit unprepared, like underprepared, a little underprepared for that fight because Anthony's a tough dude, and I underestimated him too. I thought he was going to be another guy that I could take out, you know. I trained for the full fight, but I in my mind leading into the fight, I thought it was going to end in the first round because I really didn't think that he was going to have any of the skills close to what I had, and I didn't think he would be able to beat me. But, you know, he's a tough guy. He worked hard.
Well, despite all those complications, you fought a great fight. You were very resilient and fought all the way to the end. What drove you to keep going when you were – I mean, it seemed to me that in the first couple rounds you were getting – as you said, he was kind of getting the best of you. What drove you to keep going in that third round?
You know, it's hard to say, man. It's really hard to say. It was just the fight. It was just, you know – it was just like the fight in me. I can't like give up something like that. No matter how badly you're getting beaten, I know it sounds like a cliche, but you know it was really just the fighter in me. I can't give up. I'm not going to stop till the end. I don't care about getting hit. I don't care about being tired. I was still swinging and swinging and swinging even when I was passed out on my feet. because that's what you do, you know, that's how you fight. You get into this sport, you don't get into it to where if a guy is beating you up a little bit, you don't cover up on the ground and let him TKO you because, you know, and the referee does it because you don't defend yourself or whatever. No, man, you got to fight the whole time. You fight the entire fight, and that's just my mindset when fights come around. You know, I've broken my hand 5 times now, and they've all were in the first round, and I felt every single one of them break. And they all broke early in the fight, but I always kept going. I never let it affect anything. I barely even, you know, tell my corner when it's broken because I think it's 2 or 3 times now I've had to go into the second round, and I knew my hand was broken. But, you know, like I said, I didn't care that it was broken. I was going to throw those little bones that were all crunched up against his face still because it didn't hurt my hand, and we're in a fight. You know, he's trying to beat
ouch.
Me. Trying to, you know, exactly. That's why I had to get the plate in my hand because, you know, I smashed it and smashed it and smashed it. I could feel everything moving around, but I kept going. But like I said, that's just the fighter that's in me.
So I'm just curious, what was your corner telling you going into that third round? Were they saying you were up, or did they tell you needed the submission?
I don't even remember, man. That's a good question. I think that they were telling me that I had to knock him out. I think they were saying, you got to knock him out this round. You got to get up. And then, because I was pretty passed out still going into the third round, because I remember turning around for a second, and I tried to find him. And when I looked and I finally found him, he was already, like, fading me down. And because he almost put me out with that triangle at the end of the second round. And I think they were trying to just tell me to wake up and that I had to knock him out. One thing that helped, too, is I told my corner man, I gave him a little a onesie, a little baby onesie. And I told him, hey, man, if I start getting the shit kicked out of me, show me this onesie. I remember looking over one time because they forgot to give me my freaking mouthpiece back. They forgot to give me my mouthpiece back in the whole third round because I guess they were nervous, too. And so I looked over, and they were, like, sitting there talking about it, and I saw my mouthpiece in their hand, but I was on top of Burchak punching him, so they didn't say anything. And then I saw him hold up the onesie, and that's when I started to really try to hit him hard and hit him hard and hit him hard. But, yeah, he's a tough guy.
You're in a fight, and you just described something that just made my whole hand cramp up. You're in a fight. You're punching a dude. Your fingers are breaking. After the adrenaline and the fight rush is over, how do you not decide, you know, I think I'm going to be an accountant?
Because the hand broken is totally worth it. It's totally worth, like, everything that you go through. It's totally worth the liberating feeling that you get. It's a really self-liberating feeling to win a fight, despite any injuries that you have. Like, being able to have that experience and get your hand raised in front of the lights and in front of the crowd and see it on paper and then see it on TV and see it in you know, getting all this attention for it, you don't give a shit, like, if your leg broke, you're on cloud nine, and you know, it's all worth it. 100%.
Man, that's amazing.
Okay, so your last fight, October 11th, you're back for Legacy. Did you have a game plan going in that you really wanted to make a statement? Because when I saw this fight, I saw a couple of your fights before then, but this fight, it really looks like you were really attempting to make a statement, not only to Legacy, but for the fans, for the media, for everybody.
Yeah. That fight, man, I really wanted to show everybody, like, how I can fight on the feet. I really wanted to, like, keep the fight up. And that was my game plan even going in, because I let Cody up twice. I knocked him down twice, and I let him up. I was on top of him, and I just got off of him. I just said, just get up. And I wanted to show everybody, like, what I can do. I really wanted to show them that I could punch hard and that I could kick hard. And, like, my whole game plan was I didn't care if he hit me at all. I remember sizing him up right before the fight, and I was looking at his body. I was looking at his arms, and I was like, man, there's no way this guy can punch me hard. There's no way this guy can knock me out. I get punched, and I get kicked by guys way bigger than him that are good punchers and kickers, and they don't knock me out. There's no way this guy can knock me out. So I was thinking, like, no, I don't even care. I'm just going to hit him, and I'm going to knock him out. And I really just didn't even care if he hit me at all. And I was just telling myself, knock him out, knock him out, knock him out. And then when he went to the ground, get back up so I can knock you out. And that was my whole game plan.
Oh, wow. Well, your game plan worked because you went out there like, wow. I mean, you just went out there and took him apart. Yeah, I mean,
I swung hard, man. I swung hard. I could feel the knockout coming. I could feel it.
I could feel it at home, I'll tell you that much. But now your next fight, you're actually dropping down to 125. You're going to be a flyweight now. Is this a permanent switch for you?
Yeah, this should be a permanent switch. Unless something really good comes up at 130, 135. But, you know, I keep my natural weight pretty low. I'm getting a little out of shape right now because I've got my little injuries and stuff. But cutting to 130 was really easy. I only had to cut, you know, about 4 or 5 pounds on the last day. And so I'm a pretty small 35er. There's been times when I've only had to cut, like, a couple of pounds to get to 35. But then there's been other times where I had to cut a lot to get to 35. But I think, you know, if I get enough time and I plan right, just like I did this last fight, 125 should never be a problem. You know, 35 is always going to be there, and there's always going to be fights there. But I think I should stay at 25. I think, you know, world ranking wise and trying to get to high levels wise, I think it's going to be a lot better to fight there than fighting guys as big as Burchak again at 35. But those guys bigger than him.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a next fight lined up? Do you have a guy?
I don't have anything yet. The only thing that I had lined up was a boxing match in January in Fort Worth. But you know, it's all going to depend on my hand. My hand broke in this last fight. And it's kind of a funny break, so they're still telling me whether or not they're going to have surgery. So it all depends on how the hand goes. And I'm not signed with anybody. I'm not signed or tied down with anybody right now, so I'm still open to any offers.
Okay. But now, what is your overall goal? Obviously, you're a younger fighter, so UFC certainly would. Is that the next step for you? Do you think? What do you need to do to get to that step?
Well, I think definitely I need to make weight at 125. You know, we've kind of talked with the UFC, you know, briefly, like very little, but 125, I think that's just where I need to be. I think I could hang a lot better with a lot of the 25ers than a lot of the big 35ers. So I think that's probably the main thing, is that I got to make weight, fight at that weight, and then show that I can win at that weight. And then, you know, I'm hoping that's the end of it. Hopefully I can get there already. I've been working hard over these past couple of years and put a lot of time, a lot of money, and, you know, I hope it pays off, hopefully soon.
Now, that's an interesting point, because I think a lot of people on the outside looking in, they don't realize how much you really have to sacrifice to be a fighter. Just go into that a little bit, if you don't mind, like, because there's certainly costs for the gym, there's costs for a lot of things, travel, all that sort of thing. Just, I guess, so the audience knows, it's not really all glamour until you get into the UFC.
Oh, no, it's you know, it's a struggle, man. It's a big struggle, and it's a long struggle, and unless you really have the right hookups and the right training and everything, it's going to be hard. You know, you have to pay for everything. You have to pay for your supplements. You have to pay for your recovery. You have to pay your trainers. You have to pay, you know, all your trainers. You don't just have any – nobody has one trainer. Nobody has one guy that they're like, this is my MMA coach. No, everybody's got, this is my Muay Thai coach. This is my boxing coach. This is my MMA coach. This is my wrestling coach. This is my jiu-jitsu coach. And you got to, you know, give these guys each enough attention to keep them happy also, because, you know, they're like your parents also. They put their time and they put their effort into you also, so you have to return the favor to all these guys too. You know, that's my mentality towards it anyway. I have to show these guys just as much respect as they show me. And, you know, that's just one piece of it. Then you have, you know, your home life, your stuff going on. Fights don't pay a lot when you're on the lower levels. They don't pay a lot at all, and neither do sponsors. So whatever you get, you really have to, like, you know, savor it. You can't blow any money. You got to be smart with it, you know. I, if you have a family, if you have kids or anything, it's an even harder struggle because you have to still work a consistent job. Most guys at this lower level are trying to work a consistent job, trying to get into the UFC and trying everything that they can do to be in as good a shape as possible. You know, and then you have to start taking time off of work when fights get closer, you know, and that takes away from your paycheck. That takes away from your home life. So right before a fight, a lot of these guys on the lower shows, like, they're suffering a lot. Their families are suffering a lot, too, because financially it's a big struggle. You know, and then if something does happen, let's say, like, you lose the fight, you know, there goes half the money that you were in your mind, you were thinking you were going to get. You know, and it's tough, man. It really takes a lot. A lot of people don't realize how much work it is emotionally, how much work it is, you know, physically demanding on you, on your family, on you know, everything around you. And it's hard to really bottle all this up, and then you got to go into a fight right in the peak of all of it, right at the top when everything is just at its worst. You got to somehow perform your best. You know, that's the hardest. It's hard for people to understand that, and it's easy for everybody to, you know, hate on you after a fight and say, oh, you got tired, or he got knocked out, or he got submitted, he's a bum, or he got scared. It's like, no, you don't get it, man. You don't get, like, everything that's, like, going on and everything that these guys are going through, especially in the lower levels, especially even the guys, like, trying to get to the high level of the UFC. They're going through the same thing, and typically theirs is worse sometimes, you know.
Because UFC is a little more demanding as far as getting to open workouts and that sort of thing, the media, that sort of thing. So, yeah. So with all those obstacles in front of you, why do you continue to do it?
You know, because it's your dream. You know, like I said, this was my continuation of wrestling. And this is, as long as I can balance my life, I know that myself, that my head and my body, I know that, like, I can get through this. Mentally, I know that I'm tough enough to take all of this pain. I'm tough enough to take all this, put it behind me, and keep going forward. You know, you have to be, it really teaches you how to man up and go through all this. You know, but in the end, you know that it's going to pay off. You know that you're going to have your moment. And you have all this, whether it's for the money or whether for whatever you do it for. For me, I did it because this is just what I love. You know, this is my dream. My dream was to be a world champion. My dream was to be the guy at the top, to be the guy that everybody looked at, to be the guy that they all said, like, oh, there's Ryan, you know, I want to be like him, or you should try to be like him, or you should try to move like him. You know, that's what you want. You want that glory. And, you know, after every fight, you get the taste of it a little bit, but it's not that full taste that you're trying to get, like, into the UFC. You want to hear the crowd. You want to feel the crowd. You want to feel the win. You want to feel, like, the energy and the rush of it. That's kind of why you keep going. You take the injuries. You take the huge amount of pain and stress, because it's just that worth it at the end of it.
Well, thank you for that answer. That's for sure. Now, do you want to give a shout-out to your sponsors, to anybody that's helped you out along the way?
Oh, yeah. I got to give a big shout-out to Lockout Supplements. They've been with me since day one. Greg Green of Lockout Supplements. Purist Labs, KO Reps, Orin from KO Reps, Onnit, Hella Life, Bangkok Hard. You know, thank all you guys. Thanks to my trainers, Saxon Janjira, Jesus Chavez, everybody else that's helped me. Thanks, guys. All my training partners, I love you guys. You guys are like my brothers. And thank you, God. Thank you to my newborn baby girl. Thank you for everything. Thank you for this life and this opportunity.
And I want to thank you for coming on. Now, if there's people that want to get in touch with you, do you have any social media links that somebody could follow your career?
I do. Guys, add me on Facebook. I don't have a page, but if you add me, I accept all my friends. Add me. I keep it updated with everything. My Twitter is @BabyfaceBenoit. Give me a follow, tweet me, everything.
All right. I want to thank you so much for your time. I'll let you get back to your baby girl, and thank you so much for coming on tonight and taking some time out to talk with us.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Okay. You have a good night now.
Texas, Ryan Benoit.
the smooth jazz of the Mystery Men on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. That was the IC Flapjack Bunker. You can get their album, new album, at lucharock.com. And I think it's $9?
$9, and it's lucha-rock.
Lucha-rock.
Is very important.
Lucha-rock.com. That's lucha-rock.com. And we're going to go right in to the MMA.
Omega, there is so much going on in the world of MMA. You have the owners of the two top companies fighting over Twitter. You have documentaries come out that talk about the first 20 years of UFC. You have Bellator put on a pretty good free. My goodness, just so much is going on. You even had fights tonight. And tonight... Yeah, tonight from Fort Campbell, Kentucky, it was Fight for the Troops. So what happened here? Was anything, did we see anything good?
We saw quite a bit good, honestly.
Oh, my goodness. Wait a second. Let me see if my sources are correct.
Your sources?
Did Alexis Wikipedia? Davis, yes. Did Alexis Davis defeat Liz Carmouche?
She did.
Oh, that's a shock.
That is a surprise. A little bit, at least in my eyes. I think it was a surprise in the eyes of Vegas as well. So, that fight, which actually was going on just as we were starting this particular podcast, was Liz Carmouche didn't seem to get going. She never seemed to really get anything going except for one or two punches that did leave Alexis Davis bloody. But Alexis Davis was the more aggressive fighter, coming forward, landing shots, and just kind of keeping Carmouche backing up and backing up and backing up. And it was that way for the whole fight. And I don't know why Carmouche didn't go for a takedown, go for her ground and pound, use her strength advantage, at least the assumed strength advantage she had over Alexis Davis. They're about the same size, but she didn't use her advantage to try to take control of the fight. She just was on her heels the whole fight, and that's not going to win you in a points game. So Alexis Davis took the 30-27 decision on all cards.
Wow, that's pretty big. That shakes things up because, of course, Carmouche, she was the first part of the first women's fight in the UFC. So, I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting that's going to shake up the rankings a little bit. I mean, Carmouche was number 4, Alexis Davis was number 6, with Sarah Kaufman sandwiched in between. Kaufman beats Davis, so I would expect Sarah Kaufman, even coming off that loss, to potentially move up to number 4 in the rankings. So it's an interesting thing. We talked a little bit about Liz last week as being potentially the next one in line after Kat Zingano. I don't think that's the case anymore.
Yeah. I mean, this really does shake things up, and for a card that really, when you looked at it on paper, it really didn't offer much, you know, to the casual fan at least. It's on a army base or something of that nature. So, what else? You said we had a lot to take away. I know that Russian. Go ahead and say his name.
Rustam Khabibov.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's why you're here, by the way. If you never figured it out quite yet, you're indispensable for...
I'm only here for the pronunciation. That's all I'm good for.
But I heard he delivered a hell of a kick.
That was a heck of a kick. A thunderous roundhouse, spinning back kick that took Jorge Masvidal off his feet. Wasn't able to finish, though. But it was a good fight. It was a very competitive fight, and I honestly thought that Masvidal could have taken that fight, at least on the scorecards. but it ended up going to Hopalov. It was very competitive with, you know, got them trading shots with him throwing the, you know, trap. Hopalov didn't get his trademark suplexes off like you were expecting him to. But he does show, you know, that combat Sambo strength. You know, so he is a really good fighter, 16-1, moving to 17-1, I think, at this point. So he's on a roll. This was a tough fight for him, and he persevered and got the win. So,
now, anything else of consequence that happened?
Well, I think there's a couple of other things that came out of the prelims. The prelims were very good on this fight. There's a mild upset in the women's division with Amanda Nunes getting a first round TKO over Jermaine Durandami. Jermaine, the Iron Lady, she's a really good kickboxer and was expected to probably take this fight. I mean, I believe Durandami was ranked number 9. I guess Nunes was number 8, so I guess it wasn't that mild of an upset. I was picking the randomy, but Nunes managed to did what you had to do to beat a kickboxer that doesn't have a good ground game. You take her down, you mount her, and you pound her out. It was potentially a little bit of an early stoppage. I thought certainly Joe Rogan was on the fence, was saying that Durandami was blocking the shots from Nunes, but you know, some of them were getting through. Ultimately, the ref stopped the fight. A little bit early, I thought, but okay, it was close. It was in that gray area about whether or not you stopped the fight or not. So, Nunes picks up an important win, stays relevant in the women's bantamweight division. The Dennis Bermudez Steven Seiler fight was great. It was a great fight. I mean, it was kind of reminiscent of the fight we just talked with Ryan Benoit, with his loss. It was that same kind of fight where Steven Seiler was getting beat pillar to post, but was still managing to be resilient and try for submissions, to try everything, and managed to survive for 3 rounds. It was just a great, great fight. Dennis Bermudez looked awesome, looked strong, grabbed some great submissions, landed some big shots, looked really good. He's trying to become relevant again in that division, and then the next one on the prelim card was George Roop, who, you know, he's had some ups and downs. He ended up losing to Francisco Rivera, who's got some heavy hands, man. He's got some ridiculous power, and he was just it was. Roop managed to survive the first round, but then Rivera came on and started just laying on Roop. Roop, you know, he's always been competitive. He's always been tough to put away. He's always been that guy that finds a way to come back. He didn't do it this time because Rivera was just, like I said, power shots to the head, repeated power shots to the head. Yeah. It was a matter of time in the second round before it was over, and it was thankfully over.
Roop is a very strange fighter as far as the streaks he gets on. He's a very up and down type of guy. He won 3, lost 1, won 1, lost 2, won 2, and now he lost again. So he's really this wild card. You never know which George Roop you're going to get. He's like a box of chocolates, quite frankly.
Wait, yes. You never know what you're going to get. Now, we did have a little bit of a controversy in the final prelim bout. Bobby Green versus James Krause. Now, this fight started out, it was looking like a good fight. There was somewhere in about the first third of the round 1, there was a groin shot.
No.
Okay. So it was a groin shot. Bobby Green hit Krause with a groin shot. They're both moving. It's Big John McCarthy in the ring, and McCarthy's like, "You're both moving. It's okay. Keep your targets high." So they go about 2 more minutes, and then there's another groin shot.
Oh my!
Bobby Green hits James Krause right in the, you know, again, and Big John McCarthy takes a point.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he took a point.
Good.
He said, "Okay, you know, that's 2 in the same round." you're done.
What fight was it? I don't mean to. Who was that guy? He fought Congo. This is like at UFC 89 or something. But he fought Chet Congo. Mustafa something. I doubt you remember the guy.
Mustafa El Turk?
Yes. Yes, that guy. Those guys just exchanged groin shots the first round. It was just back and forth groin shots. There were no points taken. But look up that fight if you're a fan of groin shots.
Those are big dudes.
They kept clinching against the cage, and they would go for that knee to the body, but inevitably they just kept on kneeing each other right in the family jewels. It wasn't pretty.
No, it wasn't pretty.
Just over and over again, though. It was almost like that one UFC 4 fight where the guy just what was his name? Whatever, you know what I'm talking about. But go ahead.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, back to this thing. So.
I'm tangent man.
Tangent man, yes. So, as I was saying, so Big John McCarthy takes a point away from Bobby Green. So they start the fight again, and it's no more than 30 seconds later. And you see Green throw out this kick that it's kind of just around. It's a straight roundhouse kick. It's not a knee. It's not a front shot up the middle. It's a roundhouse kick. Takes Krause about it hits right at the belt line, right at the belt line. You hear a snap like it hit the cup, and Krause goes down like a ton of bricks. McCarthy stops it, but so everybody thinks, okay, well they're stopping it. It's going to be a no contest or a DQ victory for Krause, and then you hear John McCarthy say, "No, that was a legal shot. You're done."
Mm.
So. Effectively, Bobby Green wins by TKO because he said McCarthy basically said it basically stopped the fight like it was a regular injury type thing. And if you look at it's very close. The kick is right on the belt line, but it's not one of those ones that goes straight up and hits. You know, that's usually the groin shot thing. But if you listen back to it, you hear that smack like it hit the cup. So I don't know if it was the right call or not, but I mean it was very close. I think it hit. It looks like it hit above the belt. Looked like a legal strike. So Bobby Green picks up the victory.
Is this on YouTube somewhere?
It probably will be soon.
Because that sounds weird. Like that sounds like the way you're describing it was way too close to call it like that.
It's.
Dan, let's just say Pompadour would have been in trouble.
Gotcha. 10-4.
So in the main event,
man,
he just needs to start taping down.
Yeah,
that's all I gotta say.
Extra strength.
Well, if you're wrestling 42 minutes, you need to tape down.
Boing.
Now, dear God. The main event, Tim Kennedy, making his fellow Marines proud with the TKO finish, right?
Yeah, he's an Army Green Beret, actually, but okay.
Well, he made someone proud. He probably made the Marines proud, too.
Sure. Wow.
Whatever.
I'm sure they're the same thing.
It's a fight for the troops, my friend.
Anyway, yes, he made certainly made someone proud, at least maybe Mama Kennedy, because he... knocked Rafael Natal quite out. A thunderous left hand towards the end of round one that was no question that Natal was done. He looked decent. I thought Natal was actually looking pretty competitive up until that point. He was in the fight, and then as we've always talked about with MMA, it only takes one. And if you land it right, that's a KO. And the interesting thing I saw on Twitter, though, with Tim Kennedy, is this is his first knockout since he was in the IFL, if you remember that.
Wow.
So that was a while ago.
That would certainly be some time ago. Let's see, IFL. We're going back to 2007.
International Fighting League?
God only knows, Dan.
Yes, that was what it was.
Okay.
Yes.
Trying to keep all
it was an interesting promotion because it was teams.
Oh.
It was teams of fighters.
Yeah.
So.
I have one question. I mean, why isn't Kennedy taken a little more seriously? I'm looking at his record right now. He has a very good record. Is it just that he hasn't fought anybody of really a name? I mean, he did fight Rockhold. It looks like he fought... Well, yeah, but that was a middleweight title fight, and he fought Souza. He lost, but yep. I'm just saying... Maybe it's just because he hasn't gotten past that next step.
I think he needs to rack up a win against someone, a name fighter. I mean, he needs to rack up, you know, is it a top 10 fighter, is it a top 15 fighter? I think it's probably what he needs. Natal might be on that cusp, so he might get a step up coming next year. But, you know, when he lost to Robbie Lawler, or when he beat Robbie Lawler, it wasn't the same Robbie Lawler we've seen in the last couple of years. Yeah, but he did lose. But he did lose to Luke Rockhold. He did lose to Jacare. He needs to just prove that he can do it now. Maybe he's come along. Maybe he's improved his skills. He certainly looked good tonight. So we'll see. But I think that's what it is. I don't think he hasn't been given the opportunity or has not made the most of his opportunities at this point.
I mean, if you think about it, because they really got behind Brian Stann, which is a very similar story, so I don't see why they can't put the market. I know Strikeforce was getting behind it, and maybe with this fight for the troops, this was to see, you know, to test the water, so to say. Who knows? But how was the card overall? How would you rate it? Was it good? Was it worth the time?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fights on there that were worth your time, and the only one that was probably not that good was, you could arguably say that the Carmouche-Davis fight wasn't that good, which is somewhat unusual for a women's fight. I also thought the other fight, Honey Marks versus Yoel Romero, was somewhat lackluster, although it was interesting because Romero he picks up the KO victory, but he moves really weird. So it's at least might be worth your time to watch the fight just because watch him move because he's kind of like slow and then he all of a sudden explodes and comes out really fast with something. It's just interesting. He doesn't fight like anybody else in the UFC. But although overall there's a lot of finishes, a lot of good fights, even the one and mostly the decisions were good. So I think it's worth the time and, you know, certainly the curiosity factor with Bobby Green versus James Krause. So, I mean, if it's replayed on Fox Sports 1 somewhere this weekend, yeah, take the time.
Okay, and we have another fight. I don't think it's going to be replayed this weekend because this weekend we have another UFC fight. Another fight card, and this one, I am proud to say, is headlined by Dan Hendo Henderson. As he tries to get back on the winning side of things, ever since that Hua fight, he hasn't had too much success. He's been on – I think he's really had a strange game plan going into his last couple of fights, waiting to unload that. Maybe at this point with his age, he doesn't want to wrestle. He doesn't want to grind. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing. But if he wants to win against Belfort, I think he's going to have to get back to basics. Your thoughts on the main event, Dan Henderson taking on Vitor Belfort?
Yeah, I mean, these are two guys who have, or let's face it, their best days are probably behind them.
Oh.
And that's fine. I mean, they're names. I mean, this is really the only fight on this card that intrigues me in any sense of the word. But
not even Cavalcante?
No, not really.
I just like saying Cavalcante. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you just like saying, you know, Feijão is, I mean, he lost his last fight. He has no contest with Mike Kyle. He's lost two out of his last three. He lost to Dan Henderson. So.
Yeah.
So, there you go. But with the back to the main event, you know, Henderson needs a win. He needs a win if he wants. I think I read that this is his last fight in his contract.
Oh, is it? Oh no.
Now, does that mean he's out of the UFC if he doesn't? If he doesn't win,
he could be out either way.
He could be.
He's always had a contentious relationship with the UFC. I mean, he won the Bisping fight at UFC 100, and he was still out. And he redefined his career in Strikeforce, but went on a great tear there in Strikeforce, and then came back to UFC, had that great fight with Hua, and now it's kind of, you know, back to the drawing board.
Yeah, that's the point. And so, you know, I don't really see a path for Henderson to get back into that place he was.
I don't see him contending.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see him contending again, and that really hurts me to say. I do see him contending if he were to go to the land of the UFC fighters or the released UFC fighters, and that's, of course, the World Series of Fighting. Now, if he went there, I think that would shake things up a bit. It might be a good career path for him. He likes going to those smaller promotions. I mean, Strikeforce, he certainly, you know, what do you have? A five-fight contract there? And then he came back.
Like that.
He came back, of course, Zuffa, which I learned is Italian for fighting. I did not know that before the documentary. But before Zuffa bought out Strikeforce, he was probably on his way back anyway.
Yeah, I think probably that's the case. I don't know. Let's face it. I mean, he needs a win. I really think that's the case. Vitor is an interesting place, though. You look at Vitor, you look at the UFC fighter rankings at middleweight, and you say, well, I'm number two.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there's another month and Anderson Silva and Chris Wyman go at it for the second time. Assuming, either way, I think he's probably the next guy. You know?
Should he win?
Should he win? So there's a lot at stake here for Vitor Belfort right now.
I think it's a all win. The only thing Dan Henderson is really doing is spoiling at this point.
I think it gets Henderson back into maybe another attempt at a run at light heavyweight. Maybe.
Well, is this a light heavyweight bout?
I that's what I was trying to figure out.
I'm looking at the notes. It says light heavyweight belt.
I think it's light heavyweight.
It is.
So, it's
Vitor goes all over the place.
Vitor bounces up and down, but he, you know, right now, he's definitely more suited to middleweight. Vitor Henderson, I almost argue, is better suited for 205, but that's not really the best place for him. He'd probably do better at 185, but I think at his age, he's having trouble making. He would have trouble making that weight now, potentially.
Yeah, Henderson's getting up there. What is he? 44, 45?
43.
Wow.
So
I mean, he. It's only going to get. 43. I mean, it's only going to get worse for Henderson. I mean, the time was really last year, that Jones fight, and who knows what would happen with a good camp and everything. You never know. And he just hit a roadblock. But Belfort, getting back to your point. If you look, his last 10 fights or so, he's only lost two fights. And those were the champions.
Yeah.
Anderson Silva and John Jones.
Two of the pound-for-pound best.
And the guy has knockout of the night written all over him for every fight he's in, just about.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is this is a rematch.
It is, from Pride.
From Pride, 2006. So, you know, that was a long time ago, for one. But, you know, these are not the same guys. Arguably, Vitor is better. And certainly he's proved it. Certainly, you look at Vitor's record, you say, well, you know, I only lost to John Jones and Anderson Silva. You know, who'd you lose to, Dan Henderson? You lost to, you know, Leo Machida's no slouch, but you lost to Rashad Evans. Last time out.
You had to bring that up.
Oh, and by the way, you lost to Jake Shields. So, you know.
Stop it.
So, I, you know, just on a resume right now, just on momentum right now, I lean towards Belfort.
I do, too, as much as I hate to say it.
And there's just more at stake for Belfort.
Yeah. Unless Henderson is really motivated to say, hey, I've lost two in a row. This is not who I am. I'm a championship caliber guy. This is my last run. I have to do something.
Yeah, well, if he's fighting for his job, then yeah, he might be motivated enough to do that. But
if not, World Series of Fighting gets a little more interesting.
But I mean, sorry, my dog's barking. Bad dog. It doesn't matter what does he have to prove at this point? If he loses, does he go out and is he diminished by losing to Vitor Belfort?
No.
Not really. I mean, how many times did Chuck Liddell lose before he retired? You know?
That was a lot worse. He was just so punch drunk by the time he was done. Nothing ended. I mean, I see what your point is. It didn't diminish. Like, people don't go back and say, oh, yeah, the most they'll say is he stuck around too long.
Yeah.
Not that it diminished his career. I mean, Matt Hughes, he got knocked out by BJ Penn, and he was pretty much like, yeah, that's it. I don't want that anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm done. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to lean towards Vitor now, I think, and we'll see.
I have to agree. But moving right along, that's Saturday. It's a Brazil card, so keep that in mind if you tune in. Now, what I mean by that is you're going to see a lot of Brazilian names and not too much else. I mean, it's a Brazilian card. I mean, that's really the best thing to tell. Now, next week, we're going to be talking about UFC 167 and the dethroning of GSP by Johnny Hendricks, the great American hope.
The great white hope.
He really is. He really is. I certainly hope.
I am not afraid of Johnny Hendricks. I'll lay on it for 25 minutes and it'll be over.
You uneducated fool.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
That's right. GSP. He is. What else is going on there? Oh, Sonnen's fighting. Oh, we got a good. That's a good pay-per-view. I can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah, the pay-per-views are really good. This is actually the week, I would say, is the weakest for UFC. This next card coming up, the Brazil card, is the weakest one in this stretch. And you think about all the great cards we've had wrapped around here.
Yeah.
You had to have one.
I'm really only watching for the main event to see if Henderson can pull it off. I really don't know. It depends which Henderson and if he can unload the H bomb.
Yeah,
that's what it really comes down to. But that UFC 167, I can't wait to talk about that because Cerrone, one of your favorites, is on there. On the preliminary card. But not only that, we got Koscheck making a comeback. We got, it looks like Rory McDonald, which is, but Rory McDonald's taking on Robbie Lawler, the reinvented Robbie Lawler.
Should be great.
Oh, yeah.
That's got Fight of the Night on it right there.
Chael Sonnen, we're going to see if he can, keep the momentum going here.
Chael Sonnen taking on Rashad Evans just before he goes to do the Ultimate Fighter Brazil versus Vanderlei. So,
yeah,
he would really like that momentum.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll talk about that next week. But I want to talk about, before we get too far into Bellator, I want to talk about this. Now, this is from MMAfighting.com. And Rebney and Dana White, they clashed after the karma jab. Now, what this was about was after Eddie Alvarez won, Dana White, and you can find him at Dana White on Twitter, he said, I'm hearing Bjork got served a big fat plate of karma tonight. Congrats, Eddie. Bjorn Rebney, and you can find him at Bjorn Rebney, said, at Dana White, if Fight of the Year and 10 times better ratings than you did on your last televised show is karma, bring me another plate. Ouch.
Damn.
So, what are your thoughts about that, Omega?
Yeah. I mean, they both have points.
Well, they both do. Dana was talking about Eddie Alvarez, of course, beating Chandler. You know, big karma there, and Bjorn went the other way with it.
Yeah.
So, interesting that they're actually starting to communicate. From
the perspective of Bjorn, I find it an interesting spin, because you think about what this card was supposed to be. This card was supposed to be on pay-per-view. Their first pay-per-view. It was supposed to be headlined by Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson.
Thank God it was.
You know, and
that was a blessing in disguise.
It was no kidding. For the fans, it was a blessing in disguise. But I mean, obviously, you know this card must have cost them money.
Oh yeah.
They had to put it on Spike TV last minute. They lose out in the pay-per-view revenue. You think about it, what is Dana White talking about? Well, Eddie Alvarez doesn't really want to be there.
Yeah.
He's their champion now, and he wants out as soon as possible. Their groomed fighter, King Mo, got exposed again.
Again.
So, and their other champ, Pat Curran, didn't really come through very well either, so... By all accounts, it wasn't a disaster from the fact that it was like, you know, it was a horrible card, because obviously the Chandler Alvarez fight was amazing. It was a great fight. But overall, for Bellator, I think they're in a weaker position now than they were last week.
Well, do you think more eyes are on it because of this free show that they gave away?
Well, you know, absolutely. I mean, there was at least to say... Chandler Alvarez, at least with the hardcores, being on free TV, that was worth it for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some buzz, and even when the casual fans or the fans that at least are tangentially plugged in, realizing that a pay-per-view card just dropped to free TV. There's some tune-in factor there, but as I said, I mean, from a business perspective, I think it's got to hurt Bellator all the way around. So I think Dana has a point, but at the same time, Bjorn's spin does have at least some merit, because they did do some really good ratings for this card.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It is never good. History will show. It is never good to have a pay-per-view quality show for free.
I disagree with that. The Royal Rumble started out as a free show.
Yes, but eventually that went to pay-per-view.
Well, sure, but I'm just
WrestleMania
saying...
WrestleMania started as closed circuit, went right to pay-per-view as soon as it could.
It depends on what you're doing. If you put a pay-per-view quality card on Fox TV, main Fox.
Yeah, yeah, Fox. That's
like,
as in, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, the flagship Fox. At Spike TV at 10 o'clock on a Saturday is a bit of a different story.
I meant after the pay-per-views have been... I meant post-pay-per-view establishment. Like, having a show that you can make more money on and instead doing it for free doesn't usually pan out for the best.
Oh, yeah, I'm in agreement with that.
You know what, though? I mean, the pay-per-view, how well would it have done? $35.95 or $44.95, whatever it was, headlined by Rampage and Tito. I mean, these are guys that both lost their last three in UFC. And these are guys that have seen better days and that have had trouble being motivated to fight.
Unfortunately, coming from the wrestling aspect that I do, if you would have told me, "Oh, you gotta watch MMA. Oh, these guys are gonna be on the fight," you couldn't have paid me to watch that one.
I don't think
who those two are.
I don't think ticket sales were great for the card, and I don't think pre-orders of the pay-per-view were great at all. I tend to agree with you, Dean. I don't think this pay-per-view would have done well.
It was going to be an embarrassment.
It was going to be an embarrassment, I think.
It's a bad situation either way.
Think they made the best out of what they had after Tito broke his neck.
Yeah. Well, I think from a fan goodwill perspective, I think they made out. They probably made out. The real test will be what do they do on Friday night when they have like Chet Congo in the main event.
Yeah.
And Rampage fighting Joey Beltran, for example.
Oh.
What is the ratings going to be for the next Bellator card? I mean, quite frankly, I think Bellator is on has so many cards that you know we're given the fact that we have UFC that puts on so many cards and Bellator that puts on so many cards. I think something has to give, and I think Bellator is suffering for that. Now they do have the benefit of the channel in more homes, so they're going to rate better, but. But I think that they at Bellator, if they went to the World Series of Fighting model, where they're only doing 6 to 8 cards a year,
yeah,
I think they'd be better off.
Well, it's that tournament model that they're following, and they aren't changing it for anything. I mean, they're sticking with that tournament model, hell or high water.
That tournament model that the UFC got out of 15 years ago.
Well, yeah.
You know, just saying.
I don't know.
Granted, Strikeforce did it 3 years ago, and look how well that turned out.
Where's Strikeforce now?
Oh, I believe the USC bought them.
Yeah, that's right. I remember when they announced that, and I was like, why are they doing a Grand Prix, a heavyweight Grand Prix? And you look at the names, you're like, okay, Barnett's in there, Silva. Okay, who's this Cormier guy? You know, it was... Yeah, it was all these.
Cormier wasn't even in it at first, was he?
He was an alternate.
He was an alternate.
He fought Monsoon or one of those other flubs that they had floating around in the heavyweight division to be the alternate, and he got in. And then who did he replace? He replaced the Overeem, right?
Yeah, Overeem popped for Roy, didn't he?
Yeah, that's a similar story. But I think we covered the Bellator. There is a fight of the year contender in there, the Alvarez-Chandler fight. People are certainly talking about very close fight. That could have been Bellator's Griffin and Bonner. That's an overused term now. That's becoming a cliche, I think, in the MMA world. You know where?
I got to learn that one.
Yeah. But let's move on to Raw now, guys. Okay. Who did you both catch Raw? Did you see the highlights? Have anything to say?
Why are they doing what they're doing? It literally looks like it's just a hodgepodge of stuff.
Well, when you have 3 hours to kill.
Oh, they gotta stop it! It's obviously pissing me off. I'm sure they're doing it just to do that too. No, I don't. Oh. I'm sorry, my head hurts. Like, just thinking about it. The Sandow thing, listen, I'm with you 100% about Cena now. I'm over it. I'm tired of it. I'm glad you're healed, and I'm glad you're the champ again. But last week when Sandow, what did he do? Who did he piss off?
He was the one
to cash in first and lose first.
I don't think he is. I believe Cena actually would be the first to cash in and not win the title.
Ugh.
But anyway, getting to your point, I like where the Sandow story is going, where he is the one who is going to end the era of Cena. I like it. Hopefully he can.
Oh, I love it. I want him to be world champ or at least on top so bad.
I think he gained a lot more out of the loss, cashing in. I think they're actually doing this smart. The initial reaction is, you sons of guns, what did you do? Because I really like Sandow. That's the initial reaction.
I hope you're right.
But I think if they build it properly, now granted, considering they go through writers quicker than I go through socks, it might be a little – I don't have much faith in this, but
hopefully
they build it properly and we get something out of Sandow here.
I hope you're right. Like I said, I want him to be – if not champ, I want him to beat Cena so badly now. It's not even funny.
Well, your thoughts on this, Omega?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like Sandow as much as the next guy, but he's been booked so weak, and I don't really care for how he's been booked thus far. So I don't have a lot of confidence they're going to push him, at least right now.
But he is in a main event program with Cena.
Yeah, he is. I'm not
against Super Cena that doesn't sell anything.
He never has.
I don't have a whole lot of confidence that he even has a shot, though, because against Super Cena.
True.
You know, I agree.
I agree. But you would hope that WrestleMania 30, every 10 years, you know, WrestleMania 10 was a big deal. WrestleMania 20 was a big deal. WrestleMania 30. Of course, WrestleMania 20 was where it all begins again. And you could say that ushered in the era of Cena. Hopefully.
Yes.
And Cena opened up that show against Big Show, actually. And by the next year, he was winning the title from JBL, the WWE title at the time. But you could say 20 is where the era of Cena started. Hopefully 30 is where they start looking at the new But and Daniel Bryan, he's so over. If this isn't going to a WrestleMania program with some sort of significance, I don't know what they're doing. And then again, you have to say the guys like Sandow, the guys like Swagger, even, who have been there for years and really haven't gotten their due. I think Swagger, if pushed properly, could be a really, especially with the mouthpiece that he has now.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. Cesaro. I mean, you have all these guys right now.
Well, Cesaro over Swagger.
Well, sure. But
I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think Swagger had his chance. And he kind of blew it.
Oh, come on. Jeff Hardy can do drugs 15 times. Swagger can be like a 10-time world champion by next year.
How much merch did Jeff Hardy sell versus what Swagger sells?
God, that's true.
That's true.
I'm not just saying.
It's a corporate. No, it is a
you
corporate
got it.
World.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
But let's take a look. One of the biggest complaints of the IWC, and I say that in quotations because it's silly, but one of the biggest complaints of the IWC is that they aren't building up the young talent. I say you have to look at the big picture, and a lot of people don't. They watch week to week, and they're like, oh, that sucked. That's horrible. What are they doing with Sand? If you look at who they had, the Shield has been built up extremely well. Now, granted, they lost the titles, but they did that to build up another young guy, Cody Rhodes.
Absolutely.
So you have Moxley that's ready to break out. You have Seth Rollins. Roman Reigns are going to break out. Roman Reigns will probably be a face eventually. You have all these pieces of the small puzzle that are starting to come back. And then you can't discount what's going down in NXT. Bo Rotunda is doing great business down there. You got who's the other one down there? Sami Zayn, who was El Generico, who's doing. He had a match of the year contender that nobody's seen because NXT is on Hulu. But you have all these matches and you have all these pieces coming together, and I think within 2 to 3 years it's going to be a different WWE, and they're just Vince McMahon's not stupid.
No,
he knows.
Right.
He knows how to build a company, and he knows that this is obviously – it's an ebb and a flow. Wrestling has always been an ebb and a flow. 84, it started with Hogan. It started before then when you had Bruno, and then you had superstar Billy Graham, Bob Backlund, which was kind of a low point for wrestling in a way. Then you had Hogan, took off like anything. After Hogan, you had kind of a slow burn where you had cartoon characters. You had – gobbledygookers and the Gooch, and you had all this nonsense. You had
Mantor.
Clowns. Yeah, you had clowns coming out and that sort of thing. I just got the Best of Raw, Seasons 1 and 2. I think it's the Best of Doink the Clown, quite frankly. But
oh, God.
The Best of Crush and Doink the Clown, the feud. They have all the feuds in there. But anyway, getting back to the point, it's an ebb and a flow. You had Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, that era. And then it kind of died off. Attitude Era, it picked up. It's just this period of time, it's taking – there's not somebody that you can get behind like there was – if you like Stone Cold and you like that brash, flip the bird type of character, you had that. If you didn't like Stone Cold, you had The Rock, you know, just a cool guy. If you didn't like – you had The Undertaker. there were so many people you could get behind and enjoy. And if you didn't like WWE, you could flip the channel and watch NWO. If Hogan was your thing, if Scott Hall was your thing, if The Outsiders, if Sting was your thing, up in the rafters. You had so much different things that you could put yourself behind, and right now there's not somebody. For me, right now it's Moxley, and I'm waiting for him to break out as a single star.
Oh, Moxley could be such a great heel, such a mean, evil P-word.
And frankly, go to RF Video right now and find the best of Moxley in CZW. You'll be amazed if you're a WWE fan. You never saw
CZW.
$20. Go there, find it. It's amazing.
I've loved what the CZW IPPV is. What they didn't do it this month, but the last couple of months they were showing some of the best of. Yeah.
There was a triple threat a few months back that they had Moxley and Gage, and I forget who the third.
Oh, it was a masked dude.
Oh, Egotistico Fantastico.
Yes, that's it.
But anyway.
Great match.
With Salamander Jones on the call.
Oh!
Indeed. But you know what? It just happens. I've noticed on commentary that just kind of happens.
Yeah.
You'll see a high spot. And you do, because that's your natural reaction. But anyway, getting back to it. It's a cliche of announcing, but there's not anybody right now to get behind. And I think when Solomon Crowe and all these other, there's so much going on. Solomon Crowe hasn't even debuted in NXT yet. You haven't had that group of guys that have gone down. Mike Bennett though did. He's actually a former ECWA referee and a referee throughout the New York area. He actually debuted on Superstars. So congrats to Mike Bennett there.
Where are Superstars? Is that Hulu as well?
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't
know that was still on, man.
Yeah, I think that's no, that's not Hulu. That's the weird
Ion.
Station. Ion, yeah. Yeah, that's still on Ion.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. But either Superstars or the main event, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think once there's that breakthrough guy, and they kind of have it with Daniel Bryan, it's almost there.
I don't understand. Well, like they have him.
They're not pulling the trigger. Both of you. Dan, you start, then Omega.
I don't understand. The bullet is in the chamber, and the like you said, they're not pulling the trigger. I don't see any flaw with him being on top, and you said it perfectly. He's over. You couldn't get more over than he is right now, and I think they're making a huge mistake.
Before Omega, I want to throw this at you. Instead of putting Brian into the situation with Triple H and Stephanie and that whole nonsense with Kane and whatever they beat him up.
Oh, God, I don't even want to talk about it.
But Brian, why is the Big Show in this spot? The Big Show's been in that spot so many times, and I don't even want to get into the. It just doesn't make logical sense.
No, it doesn't. He could have
just left and sued and owned the company, like he said, as he was walking out. He's like, I can own this company.
Why is Daniel
And then he could have booked his own title shot.
I don't understand why he's in a supporting role on this.
I don't know either. Omega.
I don't know. I mean, I think to your point, wrestling cyclical, I think at this point, you know, I'm hoping there is a new star to come up that can shine like John Cena, because that's what's going to take to knock John Cena out of where he's at.
Well, a guy who sells merchandise, a guy who is actually a spokesperson like John Cena. They're not going to do anything with John Cena, because I've said it before. I hate the guy in the ring. I hate whatever he does when he wrestles, but the guy is such a great guy. I mean, deep down, he's a great guy. I've seen what he's done. Like, this kid had a heart operation. And he comes out on the Today Show, and he's like, hey, you're the champ today. And he gives him the belt. And he's like such a nice guy. What he does for Make-A-Wish is amazing. He's a great guy. He's the perfect spokesperson for WWE.
Absolutely. And that's it. I mean, he does so much positive for the company in so many ways. He is not only through the Make-A-Wish stuff, but like him or hate him, he sells merchandise. His segments get ratings, like it or not, because if he didn't get ratings, they wouldn't bring him back after 4 weeks from an elbow injury.
You know, oh, indeed.
You know, I mean, you can deny it all you want. You can hate him all you want for how he wrestles. You can hate him because you're tired of him. I understand all those things. It does not matter.
Now, to your point, I think they should freshen him up. And everybody's been saying heel turn for years, but I don't think that he – there are some people that could be a heel and still go out and do the Make-The-Wish stuff. I don't think – because for him to be a complete heel – for him to live that gimmick, for him to be...
He couldn't do the Make-A-Wish. He couldn't do the... He'd have to disappear from that.
He could.
Yeah.
He could do it. But it's one of those things where I just think they don't want to risk it. Because they have the kids. And WWE, when they started the PG era, said they wanted this to be cradle to the grave. They wanted to hook them as kids and have that viewer for the rest of their life. It's in their minutes that this is exactly what Linda McMahon, when she was CEO, what she laid out, cradle to the grave, strategy.
Which is okay. So,
yeah, well, you're reaching that transition point very quickly, because Cena's been around for what, 10 years, you know, whatever it is now,
and that's how long it took for Hogan. Hogan went from 84 to 93.
By the way, when Hogan went heel, does anybody remember, because I was a bit younger, did he stop doing the Make-A-Wish, the appearances?
He was never really that involved when it, not like Cena. Cena, that's like a second job.
Oh, yeah. But, like, I mean, when he went heel, did they play that on?
I don't even know if WCW was involved in that type of charity, to tell you.
I only know they were because... It's in one of the Monster Truck episodes back in 96. They have a couple kids up in the press box watching the race, and they have Giant and Joe Gomez from Nitro with Jimmy Hart visiting the kids. It's Paul White, Big Show.
Yes.
And that's the only reason why I know they were doing that in the 90s at least.
I don't know what his charity work was at the time. I really can't. I know he's done it before, but I don't know if during the NWO era, if
like
he...
Like they hit him. Yeah.
But if I can get back to my point.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Sorry, I didn't...
Tangent.
Sorry.
Tangent. Nah. I just want to make my point. So, Cena's been around for a decade. Those kids that
a lot like Hogan. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Just like
those kids have grown up now. Those kids are the kids that are going to college now, and you're losing because of time, because of commitments, whatever, because of drinking. they're not watching Raw now. So, fortunately for them, Cena's still catching kids. But there's going to be a point when those college kids are going to come back around, and they're going to want something new. And it's not going to be Cena. Just like it's not Hogan for us anymore.
Yeah.
You know? It's that type of thing. So you need someone new. Now, Daniel Bryan is an example of someone that it appeals to a large segment of the audience, but I just don't think he appeals to the kids as much as you need. CM Punk's kind of the same way. I mean, they have some level. I mean, there's always going to be some, but it's not like that.
That Bryan gets, though, man.
I can't get over that, and every time I think, how is he not the company right now?
I don't know. I get it, but I think there's something holding him back. Is there a single thing I can point to say what it is? Is it? I don't think it's. I mean, I know what someone in like the corporate WWE might say. He's small. He doesn't have the look. Whatever. Yada yada yada. That's all crap, because we know that skill and talent will get you over regardless of size. If anyone proves that, it's Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
But there's something holding back. There was something holding back Punk. There's something holding back Bryan. And there's a segment that he's not appealing to that's causing him to not be that guy.
See, it's interesting you say it like that, because I'm sure that there are target markets that I'm sure they do their research. It's not like on the indie scene where you just go, oh, well, I don't know how to get you over. I'm sure there's target markets that they go, they get people in and they go, hey, we're going to show you a clip of this match and tell us what you liked about it, what you didn't like. And it could be something like that. I mean, just like the film industry, how they'll show the first cut of a film to a test market and changes to the film will come. Maybe that's exactly what's going on because it is a corporation and I'm sure they do their research like that.
I think unlike most corporations, though, they don't have the hierarchy that WWE has. They don't have the Vince McMahon at the top. Most corporations, I think, would have exactly what you're talking about. They're going to do focus groups. They're going to do
focus groups.
Yeah, they're going to do focus groups. They're going to do research. They're going to do demographic studies. They're going to say, okay, this is what we need. They're going to come up with a recommendation. There'll be a PowerPoint, yada, yada. They'll present it to a leadership team or a team of executives and who will rubber stamp it. This corporation, from what everything I hear, is run more like a fiefdom or a kingdom. And whatever you present has to at least conform to Vince McMahon's idea.
Well, do you think it's Triple H at this point?
It could be Triple H as well. I mean, but I got to think that Triple H has been around Vince McMahon long enough to have at least similar views. He does have a different view than Vince McMahon, fortunately, but it's not necessarily much different. At least it isn't going to be that much different until Vince fully retires.
Well, I think that's not going to happen until he's passed away. Yeah. I mean, I really don't think, and then I think that's when you're going to see a different era. But then, I mean, Linda will probably still be around. Who knows?
I don't think Linda's going to be that hands-on, but Stephanie.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stephanie seems like the alpha dog on that one.
Yeah.
No, Mom, I got this.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I think that will be interesting. It's kind of macabre to think about. Hey, I wonder how WWE is going to be when Vince McMahon dies, but...
I don't know. Let's speed that up.
Nah, I mean, Vince, like I was my original point when this all started, he's a smart guy. I think he's just really doing a slow burn, perhaps too slow for the fans, but if you didn't take that year with the Shield, it wouldn't have mattered. If you just threw him out there, and they've really protected the Shield quite well. And I think to a certain degree, Sandow.
It's not helping with 12 pay-per-views and a three-hour Monday night show still.
I think the three-hour Monday night, if the pay-per-view was done, they still had, even during the heyday of the 80s when there were only three pay-per-views or four pay-per-views, they still had 5, 6, 7 hours of television. So, I mean, that's kind of an...
But it was a different kind of television show, though.
Well, sure. I mean, you had Jobbers Against Things, but things changed with the advent of Monday Night Television when Raw became a destination television. But that's a topic for another roundtable, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk before we get out of here. Anything else you guys want to say? We covered a lot of stuff there.
Covered it pretty much.
Okay, let's talk about CZW. Of course, they had Night of Infamy happen over the weekend. It was live on iPay-Per-View. Check it out, CZW iPay-Per-View. Actually, IPPV.com. It opened up with a six-way, Dan. Now, your thoughts here, as we had Shane Strickland, and he defeated Andrew Everett, who, the former Chiva Kid, is an amazing athlete.
Yeah.
Latin Dragon, who actually had the time to shine this month.
I was so happy to see that.
Caleb Conley and the rookie, David Starr, who has a lot of press. He could very well likely win the PWI Rookie of the Year this year.
First of all, they improved big time by shutting the lights off.
I wonder where that came from.
I don't know. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. It looks much better with the lights off and the lights in the ring. It looks like, and it's not their fault.
It looks like an NWA show, and I love it.
Yeah, but it's that too. But not that there wasn't a lot of people there. It's not that there's a lot of people, not a lot of people come to the show. There's just this big, empty ice rink of wall and space. And they, now that they shut the lights off, it was 10 times better. Well, and it did have that NWA Starcade kind of feel.
Yeah, but they usually draw between 2 to 250.
And that's great.
Oh, yeah. And obviously, iPay-per-view is doing well.
Yeah. And they did get past their issues they had last month.
I didn't see it live, so.
Oh, no, it was perfect.
Good. Well,
perfect.
There you go.
I still, the only thing that bothers me is, and I'm sure it's just a technical thing, they can't mic up the ring mic to the audio feed.
Well.
It's like half the time, and we'll talk about it when Matt's going through his diatribe, I understand the F-bombs.
Most I get what you mean.
Yeah, what I mean.
They don't patch into the F word. There's that guy dressed like Jesus Christ.
I look at that guy. That guy dresses like Jesus all the effing time. Why do you sound like he's from New York? Is he from Atlantic City? Did we mention that before?
Yeah, we did. I think we actually asked him. But anyway.
Oh yeah,
Dan, your thoughts on Shane Strickland?
Shane Strickland should be on top of the company within a year.
I agree.
I really like him. Every time he comes to the ring, he impresses me. And every time he's
It's different. AR Fox, it's the same goddamn match. He might be the whole Fox and show, but it's the same fucking show, and I'm tired. Pardon.
You should see his video.
Tired of it.
It was something Kelly, my co-host at the Puck, she mentioned the other day, we were talking about wrestling, and we were talking about, it got to the Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. She goes, I loved those guys growing up, but it was the same damn match every time I saw them for 20 years.
Not really Arn.
It more Flair.
Flair, it really depended who he was wrestling. I mean, that's something that goes around with Brett. Brett says the same thing, too. We're really getting off on a tangent. What's your point?
Speaking of Brett, who had the same match each time.
Stop it.
Sorry. No, I think...
There are some things I will not stand for, Dan. But go.
Rest hold. when he starts out the show, usually it's like, oh, he's starting the show. He'll never... Putting him at the beginning of the show, I think works at this point. It gets everybody going, gets the blood flowing, and Mystery Men, shout out. They get everybody just ready for the rest of the show. That match, I don't think it was 10 minutes, but it was great.
I thought it was a little short. My only complaint with that was it was a little short, but what the heck.
You have to have a six-man... A little later on, a little longer.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's a perfect placement. That wakes up a crowd, it gets people excited, and then it goes right into Greg Excellent taking on Cherry Bomb, which kind of stalled things a little bit.
I'm glad you said that, because they started off, you know, right out of the gate, took the pole, and then just the engine blew up or something.
Well, yeah, I really like Greg Excellent. I like what they're trying to do. This was really an angle-based match.
I love Greg Excellent. Let me preface this by saying that, but I really thought the next 20-30 minutes of show was just chugging along to get...
CZW does that.
I did like the spot between Craig and Pepper.
it's a very odd thing, though, because CZW, they'll start out hot, and then they'll have a half-hour promos or an angle-based match. And this is what it was. Greg did beat Cherry Bomb for the... Now, at Cage of Death, you're going to have Greg and Mama Excellent making her return.
What?
Yes.
I've never seen Mama.
You've never seen Mama. I actually had the pleasure to speak with Mama Excellent up at Comic-Con. A very nice lady.
It's not Judy Bagwell, is it?
No, she is the nicest, sweetest lady. And let me tell you something. Last year, she was involved in the match. I forget who he took on. I'm thinking Kimberly was involved. It was Drew Gulak and Kimberly.
Gotcha.
And Mama Excellent, you know, they taught her enough to, you know, take a few bumps and what to do. And Greg and Mama were victorious in that. But getting back to the point of what happens here is if Greg and Mama win, the Cherry is Greg's? Is that the thing? And if Greg loses, he has to live a healthy lifestyle.
Live by their lifestyle. And like I said before, I love the spot between Greg and
Pepper. Yes, they can.
That was funny.
Yes.
And I don't even remember what the next match was.
Well, the next thing that happened was Kimberly came out and started talking on behalf of the campaign for a better combat zone. She was interrupted by Christina Von Erie, and they will be wrestling at Cage of Death as well.
I remember why I missed it. I knocked my laptop over, and it shut. I had to open it back up.
Well, there you go. The CZW Wired TV champion, Alex Colon, was next, was with all of Four Loko, taking on John Silver. Very good match. Dan, your thoughts on the match?
Oh, the match was fantastic. You put any mix of those guys, John Silver, Azrael, with not Bandito. Why am I blanking on his name? Colon, Bandito. That's an entertaining match. You could split it two or three ways and have an entertaining match. Kill 20 minutes and be completely taken by it.
My moment of surprise was when Niles Young took on Dave Crist. Now, Niles hasn't been...
Oh, that's right. It went right into it.
Yeah, Niles hasn't really been around that much, but there he was, and he picked up the win. So that was my that was my little surprise.
Why?
Because they don't use him, Dan.
Oh.
He's just kind of there.
It's just only the fourth show I've watched in a row since getting back into the CZW thing. I don't know.
They never used the damn guy.
Oh. Well, that's dumb.
And he's slightly above average.
Slightly above average. Slightly better than me at what I do.
Slightly above average. Then Jay Chris came out with his wife, Nevaeh, and he beat Biff Busick.
I like Biff. I've heard some,
really?
I've heard some. he's generic.
Generic
like
wrestler
it.
2013.
He's okay. I like him.
Everybody calls me crazy. I don't know. I don't see it.
I don't think you're crazy. You know, not by much.
And it's a dumb name. I just don't like anything about it.
Above average.
Well, let me just scratch this off here. We will never be getting...
Good job. Maybe, what if he changes his name to, like, Dick Dickerson or Steve Stevenson?
Well, speaking of Dickinson, Chris Dickinson came out and defeated the team of Milk Chocolate.
That
was kind of forgettable.
Were
they students? What was going on?
I don't know. I had it on mute because I can't listen to the commentary.
Milk Chocolate.
Blah, 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 blah. Stupid joke. Blah, 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 blah.
And they have this revolving door thing going.
Stop.
I can't. I just can't, Dan. I can't
listen to it.
CZW World Tag Team Champions, The Blackout. That's, of course, Black G's. And Robbie Marino actually wrestled. He was very on point, if you catch my drift. Retaining over Four Loko, and that's Azrael and Bandito.
And they had another thing to say about Ruckus. Again, that was kind of audible. Listen, if you're gonna have people on the mic, make the mic audible. That's all I'm saying. What's the point of doing it if you can't hear a damn thing?
Maybe it's for the benefit of those that are there, Dan. Oh. I don't know. I'm not here to comment on that. Then we had the CZW World Champion back on the East Coast. He had a pretty good match against Chuck Taylor. Chuck Taylor is the Internet's darling.
I was impressed by Chuck Taylor.
Chuck Taylor's amazing.
Yeah.
I saw him a
I
few
don't
times.
I've seen him.
Dan, let me relay to you. He wrestled a few times at the Hallowed Proving Grounds, and the guy is amazing.
I miss the Proving Grounds.
He has dreamy eyes.
By the way, look up the Proving Grounds on Xbox.
Oh, you uploaded it?
2K14, yes.
You uploaded it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you are. I have to see. Did you put the New Moon logo?
I can't figure out how to do that. If anybody can tweet me and tell me how I can get a logo without having to create it. I'm not sitting there and painting little squares. Forget that. If I could just, you know, screenshot that and put it on.
Well,
the...
your thoughts, Dan, on Drew Gulak and McNeil.
Oh, no, it was a great match. I don't think that one didn't go long enough for me.
I certainly agree, but at that point, they were already 3 hours in. Then we
Who times... Do they have a timekeeper?
I don't think
Who times their crap out?
Is
it DJ with a stopwatch?
I think it's DJ with a wind-up clock.
Oh, I forgot to turn it back on! Damn it! We're 20 minutes late!
DJ with an egg timer.
Bing!
Go home, guys.
Go home, quick! Quick! Okay. Always reminds me of Beyond the Mat with the ECW. Get word to them that I said they have to go home in 10 seconds.
In the main event, an ultra-violent scumbag match, friend of the show, Drew Blood. He defeated Devin Moore. He hid the handcuff key to unlock his partners, Ron Mathis and Rory Mondo, while Danny Havoc and Lucky 13 remained handcuffed. And then the CZW officials unlocked the Nation of Intoxication. Matt Tremont then came out and broke the heart of Captain Dave Spieler. Captain Dave was reduced to tears, Dan, as Tremont turned his back not only on Captain Dave, but the entire CZW faithful. I have not seen treachery like this since 1996.
Nice.
Matt Tremont, you can go to hell. Straight to hell.
Let's get out of here.
I should have ended it, right?
You just should have started playing music.
But anyway.
Again, that chair shot, he turned around.
Very effective heel turn. If you were to talk to me, if you were to tell me 6 months ago that Tremont was going to turn heel, if you told me that 6 months ago, I would have said you're crazy. This is the Dusty Rhodes of this generation. This is the Dusty Rhodes for CZW. And what I mean by that is somebody that they can get behind and that they can say, that guy, I can do that. If you told me that, I would have said you were crazy. Absolutely crazy that this man would turn heel, turn his back on the fans. And Dan, that's exactly what he did. Tell us the story.
No, he came out and he basically put it on all on us. He put it all on us, for what I could tell. Yes, I'm going to bury that into the ground. But from what I could tell, he basically, we didn't support him enough, and this is why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I really...
And I don't know how much more I could have supported him without, you know...
I really don't know where it came from. It's interesting, but this sets up Cage of Death. Now, apparently, the team of four, that's Drew Blood, Matt Tremont, Rory Mondo, and Ron Mathis will be taking on the Nation of Intoxication, and that is, of course, Danny Havoc, Lucky 13, and Devin Moore. So we have seven men that will be in this cage, and Dan, I have seen some multiple people Cages of Death. I was, of course, at last year's Cage of Death.
Yeah.
Attended by at least 1,000 people at that Flyer Skate Zone. No, it was.
Wow.
That's
when you leave the lights on.
That place was packed. Absolutely packed. Annoyingly packed. I don't like people, Dan.
I did not know this.
And, oh. Yo, you know it.
You don't even like me.
I don't most days, Dan.
Yeah, no, I know.
I don't. I just... Anyway.
What about Chris? You like Chris?
I do like Chris. Chris
That's
is
cool.
All right. Chris is...
Listen.
Nobody likes me.
But
I like
that's
LA
the
Yellow
main event
Zero.
Of Cage
like
of Death. It's going to be. That's a hell of a main event, man.
I am looking forward to this, and like I said, I was looking at the calendar to see if I could do it, and with all the things that are happening towards the end of the year, I'm going to have to miss this live one. But I will be tweeting it, too much to the chagrin of some people. Although I get a hell of a lot of retweets from the boys, and quite frankly, that's all that matters. People that listen in, as long as the boys don't hate us.
Except for Biff Busick, I'm sure.
Dick Sanders.
Yeah, who's that Folsom County guy?
Amateur.
No, that wasn't Biff. That was
I know
someone else. Now, Dan, I'll tell you what.
Yes, sir.
Hell of a show. Omega, let's go back and talk about that interview one last time. Ryan Benoit, what do you think about his career, where it's going?
I think he's a well-spoken young man. I think he's got some good skills. He's got some good heart. He's got amazing resilience. I think if he tightens up his game a little bit, he can do some things in the 125-pound division. You know, is he going to be a champion someday? I hope so, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But one fight at a time, I think, like I said, if he tightens up his game, he should have some success.
Certainly. Certainly. That interview, one of my favorites with an MMA. Actually, everybody we get from MMA has been...
No, they're really good guys. They give long answers, and they really... It sounds like they want to tell you about the struggle to get to the top of a brutal sport.
I think they get it. I think a lot of MMA guys get it. The media...
Some of the guys don't get it.
Wrestlers, it's like, no, why do I want to talk to you? I'm not even going to get back to you. No.
Hmm.
I don't understand.
Or sometime their time machine gets stuck.
Sometimes. I'm not sure what happened there. I think he's upset. And I'm caught in the crossfire of something else. But that's neither here nor there, Dan.
I didn't know that was a shoot.
Indeed. You never know, Dan. This is just me thinking out loud, which is never a good thing to do.
Don't you ever.
What, think out loud?
Think out loud again.
Oh.
Stop it.
You son of a gun. Look for it. Press play.
Little kid, why did I want to come on the show? Listen, we talked to you for 5 minutes. I'm going to hang up now.
Oh, man.
I have to fill in 2 more hours of bullcrap.
Just an hour. Anyway, Dan, before we go down that path.
Sign on 4 minutes before the show.
Stop it. Omega, where can the fine people find you?
People may follow me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan, there are several places people can find you. Why don't you tell us all about it and tell us about Preston and Steve. They have something very important coming up very soon.
Ah, the Preston and Steve Camp Out for Hunger. Every year they it has been deemed factually as the largest single sponsored donation in the United States of America. The Camp Out for Hunger raises tons, literally, of food every year. And they moved it to a very prime and better location, I feel, for the South Jersey, Philadelphia area. They're having it at Xfinity Live, right at the sports complex. So bring any non-perishable canned food, literally, just bring it in a bag, drop it off.
Now, is this a literal camp out? I'm not aware.
Preston and Steve spend the week out in this camper.
Are you allowed to go there with a tent and set up? And
Dude, they have a tent.
They have tents for you?
Let me rephrase that. When they used to have it out on the Blue Route in the Metroplex in Plymouth Meeting. And MMR would have this huge – for the day, because celebrities come, sports stars come, bands come and play all day. They had this huge setup, this tent setup with heaters so people could come donate and spend as much – I spent – there was 2 years in a row where I spent a whole day volunteering, helping put food in boxes and lift it onto an 18-wheeler and take it out of there.
Now, let's say someone's unemployed. How could they volunteer their time?
Basically, you just show up and volunteer. Some people email and go, hey, I would like to, from the hours of 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock this night, I would like to officially be one of the people that are helping. You'll get a volunteer shirt. I think they usually have shirts for volunteers. If not, you get mentioned. They thank you on air. And you just, whatever time you have, you help bring the food in and put it on the trucks.
Dan, as you know, I have a lot of time on my hands. I'm thinking of spending the week with Preston and Steve.
Do you? They allow you to set a tent up? I don't know. They will. I don't think they'll let you stay in the camper.
I'm going to sleep right outside the camper for a week.
But, no, it is very well attended. You will not be disappointed or bored, trust me. But I don't know how they're doing. They usually have the camper, like, when it's not during the show, they're in the camper. Using the bathroom, taking the shower, that's where they stay. Now, years before, it was right across the street from a hotel, and they would at least let them shower at the hotel. I don't know.
Well, we're getting into different points. The thing is, when does it take place, Dan?
The week of December 2nd. I forgot the actual dates. Hold on one second. December 2nd to December 6th. And all the information can be found at PrestonSteve.com and soon at PrestonSteveRock.com.
And not only that, CZW did actually have some donations set up. I'm not sure the extent of which the fans came. And
I asked Mr. Hyde for any results. I did not get those yet.
Well, you'll probably get something back, I'm sure, once he releases it. But not only that, we're actually going to talk with DJ the week of that Camp Out for Hunger. So,
good. I have some questions for Mr. Hyde.
I didn't like how that sounded. Dan, where can people find you, though? We kind of went off on a tangent.
Sorry about that. Thanks for letting me plug that.
A good cause.
Find me at my Twitter feed at DanLaw83 or Obey the Puck every Monday night at 9 on the HIAC Talk Radio Network. Follow us at Obey Puck Show or join the Facebook page at facebook.com/group/Obey the Puck.
And, of course, there is another podcast that is part of this network. Actually, you have a show coming up this weekend.
Oh, yes! The What's Wrong with Wrestling Weekend Edition with the kind of okay Harry Barnett. I believe it's Saturday at 5:30.
Yes, that's what it's scheduled for, so I hope you guys are here.
I'm here. I'll be here. I've got nothing else to do.
But that said, you can also, I think you pretty much covered it. And I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. You can find the website that I have neglected again. At HIACTalkRadio.com. You can also check out PoopScoop.info.
Yes!
Pretty soon. Yes. I forgot in a fit of whimsy that I got PoopScoop.info, but that is a true website that
we
I will...
We are going to be entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs and all things piss and poo.
You know, we work so hard to build up the HIAC brand. We're going to be the guys known for PoopScoop.info.
Listen,
we all have to aspire to something.
Thank you. I was about to say, when we all die, we're going to be remembered for something, and I want to be remembered for the throne.
PoopScoop.info. It will be unleashed, fleshed down your throat coming soon. Not only that, you can check out the Twitter for HIAC at HIAC Talk Radio. You can also check out the Facebook, facebook.com/HIAC Talk Radio. We are on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can find the iTunes, I believe it's bit.ly/HIC iTunes. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Or just search Hell in the Cell Talk Radio.
I believe it's HIC Talk Radio Network now. When it changed on Blog Talk, I believe it changed.
I knew that.
But besides all that, next week, Omega, we are going to be joined by the owner of Legacy Fighting Championships, Mick Maynard.
Yes, that should be very interesting to get the perspective of a promoter.
Not only that, I think it's interesting because he came from Australia and started up a promotion in Texas. We're going to get to the bottom of this story because it's an interesting one. I kind of know it, but my job is to relay this story for people to enjoy. Not only that, but I'll tell you what, so that's next week. We also are going to have Damon Jackson. He is also another legacy fighter that I contacted. He will be coming up on the 20th. On the 27th, it's the next best of the best of four, and that is the day before Thanksgiving. So we're going to take a look back, probably have some clips of Tony Givens. By that point, we'll probably have some clips of Jack Duffy. because that was an amazing interview. Dan, very quickly, we had an amazing pre-roll this week. Let's kind of set this up for HIAC Talk Radio After Midnight that's coming up on the 23rd.
No, we had a great pre-roll with a lawyer and a JFK assassination historian, the name of Jack Duffy, who's wrote a notebook called The Man from 2063. And it deals with getting in a time machine and trying to stop the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But The Man is one of the most astute researchers of what happened that day and has many conclusions of theories and what might have happened that day.
I'll tell you what, Dan. Was Oswald involved? Was LBJ involved?
Was the mafia involved? I like saying mafia like Donald Sutherland.
But all this, find out on the 22nd when we unleash this amazing 80-minute interview with Jack Duffy.
It is the 50th anniversary of one of the darkest days in our country.
Certainly, certainly. I have received a new copy of the Warren Commission report. I have started perusing it. I'm also currently reading Killing JFK, 50 Years, 50 Lies. That's an interesting book as well.
Not the Bill O'Reilly book.
No.
Okay, thank God.
No, that's Killing Kennedy.
Yeah, good. Don't read anything he writes.
Well, I may or may not. Well, I like to read both sides of the story, Dan. But one thing I will not stand for is people who don't listen consistently to HIAC Talk Radio, because this is a great, great show. Don't just listen to it when your favorite comes on. Don't be a bandwagon jumper.
No, no, no. Don't be a schmuck.
Yeah, don't be a schmuck. Listen each week.
I'm bringing that back.
Yeah, because I'll tell you what, Dan, we bring quality. Right, Omega? Are you still there?
Absolutely.
I'm still here.
I didn't know. I thought you might have
listened. We and I joke around about it a lot, but there's a lot of podcasts that there's a lot of professional shows on air that just is a fat dude on Oxycontin talking to himself with lots of dead air in it. We're not like that. We want to entertain and bring something to the table.
We certainly do have some fans, but even some of those fans don't listen each week. We have two fans that listen each week.
Burr and Olson.
Yeah, yeah, consistently, and I love those guys. I love those guys.
Thank you.
I'm getting a Randy Savage. I'm getting a Randy Savage figure from George Burr. I'm so happy. Yeah.
And Bill's getting my Slapshot DVD because I hate that movie. It sucks.
Really? You didn't like Slapshot?
Oh, it sucked. Suckety-suck-suck.
Well, I guess.
It is bad.
That's how I feel about hockey.
Did you keep the Mighty Ducks?
What?
Did you keep the Mighty Ducks?
Never owned them.
Really?
I've seen all the movies.
You like Miracle?
Miracle's a good movie.
Okay, good.
No, I used to have the Mighty Ducks on VHS, but they have since been, taken by age.
Much like Blockbuster.
Much like Blockbuster. It's official. They're done. Couldn't even order them from Blockbuster if I wanted to. And the first one's okay. The first Mighty Ducks is a good movie. The second and third one, I'm okay. I'm okay with those. I don't need to see those again. I don't need to see Slapshot again. I get all the jokes now.
That was a great performance by Kevin Bacon. And that's a joke. But until next week, we'll be joined by Mick Maynard of Legacy Fighting. I love all of you.
I love you too. Screw you guys.
I'm not impressed by your performance.